It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. A great show for you. Brian Brushwood's here, the Scobalizer, Robert Scoble, and Marquez Brownlee from MKBHD. I'm surrounded by YouTube stars this week. We'll talk about Facebook's F8 conference, when anonymity isn't truly anonymous, Twitter's tumble on the stock market, and Microsoft blinked. It's all coming up next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 456, recorded May 4th, 2014. Snapchat. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Stamps.com. Start using your time more effectively with Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. For our special offer, go to Stamps.com, click the microphone, and enter TWiT. And by Citrix GoToMeeting with HD Faces, the powerfully simple way to meet with coworkers and clients from anywhere. Share the same screen and see each other face-to-face with HD video conferencing, even present from an iPad. Start your 30-day free trial of GoToMeeting today. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, use the promo code TWIT. And by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get 2 free books. Go to Audible.com/TWIT2, and don't forget to follow Audible on Twitter, user ID Audible_com. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free 2-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code TWIT. It's time for TWIT This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the week's tech news in all its florid glory. Speaking of florid glory, Robert Scoble is here wearing not one but 2 devices that can take pictures surreptitiously. Hi, Robert's going to see you. The Scobalizer, he's got his Google Glass, and I recognize the narrative clip. This is good because it's more stealth. Because it is a camera. Every 30 seconds, it takes a picture.
And if you double tap it, it'll take the next one.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. Robert was also at the Facebook Developers Conference, F8, yeah. And we'll talk about that. To his right, Mr. Brian Brushwood from Scam School. And the new show, NSFW, is now called
Night Attack at nightattack.tv. And it's filthier than ever. It's finally actually NSFW. Not that we weren't extremely thankful for the platform of TWiT, but man, do we use the F word a lot now.
Really, that was your goal in life, is just somewhere, find a platform somewhere that I can swear more.
There was some clip where Bonnie walked in and we were playing it. She goes, "Congratulations, Brian. Just wait till your daughter finds this."
So it was inside Amy Schumer that they did a kind of a Did you see this? The douchey scam school on Comedy Central. Have you seen this?
Now, as we all know, gravity goes down, yes? But if we all focus, sometimes gravity can make things go up. Now,
that's what this guy does for a living.
This reputation that magicians have, they earned it, man. That kind of thing doesn't come out of nowhere. There's a billion of those guys actually out. But yes, I agree. Douchiest version of Scam School ever.
Hey, look who else is here. MKBHD, Marquez Brownlee. Great to have you once again. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
I bet we have something that you don't have, but I should never say that. But I see that Robert Scoble here has the new HTC One, but everybody's got the HTC One MA. But this is the new Sprint version, the Harman Kardon version they announced last week. Have you played with that yet, Marquez?
I have not. I just have the Google Play Edition One, and I have the AT&T One.
I'm a fan of the M8. I just got the Nokia 1520 just to see what a 6-inch phone would be like. And I like it enough, but it doesn't have enough Google services. Now, what's interesting about this one, and I know you just got it, so you haven't played with it yet, is this is the so-called Harman Kardon edition. It has the capability of playing back this high bit rate files, the 192.
And they sent me a really nice Harman Kardon wireless speaker. That's called bribery.
You don't get to keep it, though.
I don't know.
Well, if you don't ask, you do.
I didn't have a return shipping commitment.
I think this is interesting because, you know, Neil Young has made a lot of hay with his Pono player, raised quite a bit of money on Kickstarter for basically the same idea, a player that can play instead of the MP3s we're used to, which really, I mean, I think everybody agrees there's a, you give up a certain amount when you do an MP3. But even there'll be uncompressed FLAC files, but even recorded at higher bit rates, the CD is 41 kilohertz. What is it? What, 41 kilohertz by 16 bits sample resolution. Right. And, you know, I asked Joe Walsh when he was on Ham Nation, what do you record in? And he says, well, 44/1/24. Because I said, well, why don't you do it higher? He says, because it takes up too much disk space. And nobody can hear the difference.
That's not true.
There is some debate over, you know, whether you can hear this high bit rate.
You can, music. Actually. If you get into a double testing lab.
Can you tell the difference?
You can tell the difference. Most people can, actually.
According to
Sean Olive down at Harman.
I think people can, but I don't know if I can because I'm so old. But theoretically, this phone will do it. If you have good, you'd have to have good headphones.
Yeah, yeah, like these. That's why we brought the JBL headphones.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And do you know if there's 192/24 music on here?
I haven't seen it yet.
On this panel young enough to hear the difference is probably Marquette. What do you think of the idea of high bit rate?
I went to Skrillex at Coachella, so my hearing's all
You're
gone.
You're deaf now anyway.
I mean, I'm convinced that this is the age of music entering basically like wines. You got fine wines, and yeah, there's like three dudes who can maybe taste the difference between this wine and that wine. The rest of us, you know, can buy two buck chuck and think it's great and not have any idea. I think I'm pretty sure that's where we are with audio at this point.
It's golden ears.
Yeah, it's funny. Spotify inside the settings has a way to download higher bit rate, and it does sound better to my ears. But most people
don't
even.
It's still MP3, so.
But most people don't even know that's there, right? Yeah. And it'll be interesting to compare the Pono. Also, THX has a new format that's surround sound audio that's sort of neat. It'll be interesting to compare all these different
Dolby
formats.
And THX keep pushing surround sound headphone stuff, and it just never gets picked up.
It'll be picked up by the video game people.
Right. Yep. So Pono raised $6 million. They wanted $800,000. They raised $6 million. 18,000 people, including me. I bought one, but it won't be out till September.
Yeah.
But Marquez, you're the only guy with acute enough. You're young enough that you have acute enough hearing that you could tell a difference. Have you listened to any of this high-quality stuff?
I rarely do. I just have a lot of MP3s and a lot of WAV files. And I don't record any higher.
You see? So. Kids today, your generation grew up with iPods and little earbuds. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's all you expect. And,
yeah, and what I'm recording, I'm uploading to the web just to YouTube, which compresses everything enough anyway. So even if I did record and master at a way higher resolution, you wouldn't really hear the difference on YouTube.
Well, it's the same thing for us. I mean, we could shoot this at 1080p, but why? Do you shoot at 720 or 1080?
I shoot at 2160p, and you can get a higher... YouTube will stream at a higher bit rate when you shoot in 4K, so I can upload in 45 megabits per second or export in 45 megabits per second rather than 10, which is the max for 1080p streaming. So
you shoot at 4K?
Yeah.
Wow.
Bastard.
In theory, YouTube shows 4K, but it's the same thing. You have to compress it so much, I can't imagine it.
I just don't have enough upload speed. I'll be there all night uploading one video.
Yeah, and YouTube takes forever to process those files, too, because if I'm uploading a 1080p 5-minute video, it'll be done processing in 5 minutes. But if I upload this 4K video that's 4 gigs, it takes YouTube like an hour or two to fully process to actually show that resolution.
So why do you upload MK4 HD video?
I have a 4K monitor and I like high-res video in the first place, so I'm just kind of future-proofing it for now for the day in maybe 6 years when someone's watching older videos and thinks, hey, this looks good.
You have, that's right. Last time we talked, you bought that. But you did you get a 60 hertz 4K monitor? Were you able to?
Yeah, I have the Asus PQ321Q.
That's right.
Displays, so they're...
That's the only 60 hertz ones out there, as far as I know.
Right, at Thunderbolt, yeah.
Are you running a Mac Pro on that sucker?
Yes, sir. Oh, yes, I am. Man.
Bastard!
YouTube has been very, very good to me. This is the guy who got 120,000 comments on a single YouTube video.
Yeah.
But that was a giveaway. What were you giving away?
I gave away the Nexus... Here, I can actually show it. I gave away another one of these. It's the Nexus 5 with a skin on the back with my logo on it.
MKBHD version.
Right.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
It's
That was fine. Got 120,000 comments. Wow.
Yeah. All those entries.
It's amazing. Let's see. What should we talk about?
It takes
about?
A what lot to get Leo?
Leo jealous of somebody else's numbers.
Oh, no. I'm very jealous of Marquez. I'm very jealous of Marquez. What day is it? It's March the 3rd. It's May the 4th be with you.
March. Yep.
A long time ago, in a podcast far, far away.
This is fantastic. I love the copyright-free version of the Star Wars theme.
We didn't actually want to play John Williams' famous music, so you know what they do. They just turn it up a key, they take out a note, and that's it.
By the way, I misspoke. It was DTS, not THX on the...
DTS, Santa. Right.
Yeah.
So, May the 4th be with you. This is Star Wars Day. There are people. In fact, there's somebody in the audience right now who was watching all six Star Wars movies in sequence, as is traditional on May the 4th. You see, she's looking at you.
Just promise me they're the despecialized editions, the only valid version.
This is why people don't sit in the front row. So a guy's here with his girlfriend, long-suffering girlfriend, right? No, wife? But just somebody you know?
Mistress.
Old friend. And I mention Star Wars Day, and she looks at him and goes, nah. Yeah, so do you think that's the kind of thing he would do? Watch all six Star Wars movies one after the other without eating? Yeah? More like Lord of the Rings. That's a pretty big commitment. There's only three of them, but I feel like that's more time than six Star Wars movies. It feels like it just goes on and on and on. And on and on. Anyway, happy Star Wars Day. Can you believe it's almost 40 years? It's 37 years since Star Wars
came out. Crazy?
37 years.
I saw it 13 times in the first week.
You never were a guy to just kind of take it easy, were you?
No. I was in junior high. I think I was 13.
13 times?
Yeah.
You just kept going back?
It was the best movie I'd ever seen. But I was 13.
1977.
Yeah.
No, I just went once. Yeah. Yeah. I said, that's pretty good. Well, anyway, happy Star Wars Day. So you went to the Facebook. Actually, let's take a break. And when we come back, we'll talk about F8 and a lot more. And who did that? Was that Anthony Nielsen did that fabulous...
Yeah, that intro.
Star Wars crawl. And, of course, you notice our we call it in the trade lower third.
Chiron in the trade.
I'm sorry. Pardon me. The Chiron.
He's got big timed by Chad. That was amazing.
Yes, I'm sorry. I apologize. The Chiron. Well, he probably went to broadcasting school.
For half semester.
I'm going to say Star Trek before too long, so I'll just say it now. Star Wars font. I like it. We maybe could keep this. Could redo the whole thing. Our show today brought to you by Stamps.com. Do not, whatever you do, go to the post office. Well, you can't even go to the post office on Star Wars Day. All the clerks are home watching the movies. But what if you needed a stamp, right? Well, Stamps.com, you could actually anytime, 24/7, print out legal U.S. postage for any kind of package or letter right from your computer and your printer. And then tomorrow, the mail carrier comes, they'll pick it up, take it away. Stamps.com. If you are an eBay or Etsy seller, if you're a business and you want to, you don't want to lick stamps and put them on the envelope. The other day I got an envelope, 85-cent postage due envelope from a company that wanted me to review a product. It's like that is a bad first impression that I have to pay 85 cents to review your product. Don't be that guy. Go to Stamps.com. You can buy and print official postage. They'll fill out the forms for international, for priority mail. They'll automatically send an email to your recipient with the tracking code. The whole thing, it's professional fulfillment for anybody's, for any small business. We use it all the time here. In fact, we have two accounts. We use it so much. You don't have to buy special ink. You don't have to buy a postage meter. Whenever the postage rate changes, postage meter companies will actually charge you money to update their postage meter, not with Stamps.com. The postage rate is automatically updated. You get a USB scale. I'm going to tell you how you can do that so you always have exactly the right postage. No more, not enough stamps. Or worse, too many stamps. You ever put too many stamps on to make sure it goes through? You don't get a postage due. You don't want to do that. That's wasting money. Stamps.com. You'll even save money because you'll get discounts you can't get at the post office. Visit stamps.com right now. Before you do anything else, I want you to click that microphone in the upper right-hand corner and enter the offer code TWIT, TWIT. And you'll get a $110 bonus offer. You get that digital scale. You get activities kit of stuff. You get postage, free postage, $55 worth of free postage that you can use over the first few months of your subscription. It's worth, all told, $110, including, of course, 30 days free of stamps.com. Go to stamps.com before you do anything else. Click the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in TWIT. Stamps.com. So F8 this year, first of all, they haven't had a Facebook Developers Conference in 3 years.
Something like that, yeah.
It's a long time between conferences. I think you look at Apple, you look at Google, and their developer conferences are big deals. Yep. It really is an important thing to get developers in your corner. Facebook's obviously realized this.
They bought Parse last year.
Well, that's one of the things they showed, yeah. So, first of all, Mark Zuckerberg leads it off. He looks great. He's very much in command. He's not the shy guy. You've interviewed him many times. He really is. He's almost really 30. He's grown up a lot.
Yeah. And he's confident and he's worldly now because he's a billionaire. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, he's not only a billionaire, he's got, 1.2 billion customers.
Yep.
Active. That's an amazing thing.
Yeah.
So he did a couple of interesting things. For a long time, Facebook's philosophy was kind of fail fast, break things early, and fix them. The hacker culture. He said, while that served us well, we want to be a platform now. We want to be stable and consistent. That's a big change for Facebook.
Yeah, which means he's going to move slowly. The days of some 20-year-old checking in some code without having a committee check it over first is probably over.
It strikes me that what they're saying is that, and I feel like this has happened. You guys tell me. That Facebook realized, as Google has realized and others have realized, that the monolithic portal page that you go to and everything's there is dead. That mobile is where it's happening now, right?
Yeah.
And I think Google knew this all along, it seems, that all Google said is, look, we'll just do all these different things, some of which you'll use, some of which you won't, and we'll make sure that the information we gather about you is shared across all those platforms. We have basically an ad network. And when you use Google Docs or Google Voice or G+ or Google Mail or any of our services, you'll see consistent ads across.
New Drive apps came out this week, right?
Yeah. Yep. So and I think Facebook might have realized this with the acquisition of Instagram and then WhatsApp. They don't need to fold those into Facebook. In fact, it's better if they don't. People want to use apps for specific purposes. And then Facebook is now going to become the platform underneath, the ad platform underneath. And to do that and to get developers to use it, you can't be changing every 3 minutes. You can't have a 12-year-old.
No, and one problem with apps is if you click a link on the Facebook app to maybe a SoundCloud, for instance, it takes you into the web page.
Right.
And they're
going to fix that.
They just announced a protocol that'll take you to the SoundCloud app. Now, people aren't all that happy about some of these moves because they really are, if you look at it cynically, they are taking over the app ecosystem.
They're taking over the web.
Well, the app ecosystem, which is the new web, right? I read on my mobile phone far more than I read on a desktop anymore.
Zuckerberg promised 2 years consistency in the API minimum. So if there's an API call and you're as a developer, you're using it, you can be guaranteed it'll be good for 2 years. We're going to pay more attention to customers. We're trying to build, he says, a stable mobile platform. This seems to be a big change.
The ad network is really the big thing. And most people aren't going to get crazy passionate about an ad network, but the numbers will start showing up in the next quarterly results. And that's when we're going to see the effect of that new network. Most of the developers say it's really well done. So
I'll tell you what, man, that's all great for Facebook, but as a consumer, there's only one thing I care about, and that's the anonymous login.
Right.
And it's weird because on the one hand, I applaud that he does it, but there's so much damned hypocrisy. What was it? He said, quote, I can sign in on my own terms, quote, "We don't want anyone to ever be surprised about how they're sharing on Facebook," which is a very magnanimous statement from a man who built an empire by surprising people about what they're sharing on Facebook.
Yeah, that's what I said. He's starting to grow up. He's starting to realize that changing all the time pisses people off, and he's doing things to be more user-centric.
Isn't Facebook anonymous login completely cynical? Because you're anonymous to the app developer, but you're exactly not anonymous to Facebook.
Right.
What the value to Facebook is to get you to use all these different things and collect information about you across all of these platforms.
There's a lot of ways to look
you're
at
not
it as
anonymous.
A cynic. First of all, the anonymous button takes away screen space that Amazon or Microsoft or Google could use.
Because you have the Facebook Connect, and then underneath it, Facebook Anonymous link. That's the bar where Google Plus would be.
And there ain't that much space on a mobile phone. So right there took away another button possibility from somebody else. That's one way
to say. I didn't even think about this as being an insidious way to go like a second level deeper, where you not only tell people that they're, man, that's dark, where it's like you increase the likelihood of somebody using yours because you have the word anonymous in there. And then in fact, it's totally not anonymous and they're just collecting even more data. That's horrific.
Marcus Brownlee, will people notice that? I mean, will people see the word anonymous and just go, yeah, that's cool?
I don't know if anyone's going to change. I mean, the people who care about it will probably click it and hopefully it'll be doing what it says it's doing. But I personally probably wouldn't.
So you're saying people aren't going to ever trust Facebook, whether it says anonymous or not.
That's absolutely not true in the stats. The app developers I know say, man, a major proportion of their people are using Facebook to sign in because it saves you putting that damn username and password in for all these stupid apps. And their pitch to the developers was, if you put this anonymous button in, more people will try your app because they know that they won't give you any data. And there is something to
that. Post on your behalf or whatever.
Right, because you click anonymous, the app developer, the app doesn't know anything about me.
That's the only one who doesn't. And will app developers give up that information? You know what app developers do now? You log in with Facebook, and then they say, okay, now give us your email address, your password. You still have to –
the worst
in many
ones
cases,
do. The best ones don't do
best
that.
Best one is friction-free.
Yeah.
But you're giving up something as an app developer. You're
Absolutely.
Giving up access to your customers.
Absolutely.
Is Facebook so powerful that they'll do that?
I think so. Based on talking to the developers in the audience, they say, yeah, we like this because it's yet another way to get people to sign into an app and try it without, you know, having to type in your username and password. And they know that they lose people on username and password. I know I do. If I have to fill out a bunch of stuff when I first get an app, sometimes I go and do something else.
Facebook feels a little creepy here because they're going to developers. They're saying, okay, we got this. We're going to give you some money. We'll help you with your – Parse is about helping them with their database so that we'll provide back end. So it feels a little bit like that creepy guy on The Family Guy. Come here, little boy. I like your muscles. That's a nice app. Would you mind if I gave you...
I can't argue because at Rackspace, I do the same thing. I'm the drug pusher.
But the difference on Rackspace is, it's first of all, it's open source software, right? It's an open stack.
Yeah.
And you're not really... Rackspace is not collecting information on my customers. No. They're facilitating it. Facebook's saying, hey, forget the Rackspace, the Amazon Web Services. Forget the Google code. We'll do all of that for you. You'll be in our ecosystem. It'll be a good thing.
Yep.
And I think that's tempting. I mean, I even think for us as potential app developers, we'd be tempted by that because it's our customers.
No, and they're not the only one doing it. Google's out there with an identity play. Twitter's out there with an identity play. And Microsoft is trying, but Microsoft is just not part of this world. What was really interesting, too, was I didn't see any Microsoft stuff on the Facebook stage. You know,
but you didn't see any Apple stuff, did you? Or Google stuff?
No, there was a lot of Apple talked about. You know, because...
Well, they know that iOS. They got to be on iPhones, right?
iPhone and Android are the two platforms. Yeah. And they talk
Windows
a lot
phone.
About... No. Not a single mention
like
of Windows
phone. No.
No. But that also matches all the startups I talk with, right? Very few of them build Windows phone apps.
Robert, walk me through this, because if I'm an app developer, I understand the benefits of buying into this to the Facebook ecosystem for ease of acquisition of new members.
Yep.
But it seems like an individual login and an email address would be much more valuable if what I want to do is sell stuff down the road.
It might be, but when you log in with Facebook, first of all, your users don't churn because it's one click. And then you get, if your users say yes, you get access to their birthday, to their friend
Facebook
network,
so
to
Facebook
their, all
will,
their likes.
Wait, but not if you use the anonymous one, you don't get this.
Not the anonymous one, but you know how
people
this is going to work.
Yeah.
If I'm an app developer, I'm going to offer anonymous, and then at every turn, you're going to try to do something like comment on my...
If I knew more about you, I'd help you.
Will you please give us full access to your Facebook profile or sign in with a username and password? Yeah, you know how that's going to play down.
So I think that overall, the most interesting thing here, and I have to give credit to Mike Elgin, our news director and the host of TNT, for first highlighting this for me, is this notion that the monolithic web page is dead. I think, in fact, I saw an article the other day that agrees with me. Not only are we in a post-PC era, we're in a post-tablet era. We're in an everything-on-the-mobile-phone era. And so the web experience of the mobile phone is tough. It's too small a screen. It's apps are where it's at there. We're in, you know, an era where, frankly, all of these big companies are going to say, we don't need to have one page.
Yeah.
We need to have as many apps as possible. And if it could be our own apps, it could be through a relationship with an app developer. But all of them using either the Google ad platform or the Facebook ad platform or the Microsoft ad platform or the Yahoo ad platform.
And that's where Android's way ahead. If you use some of the newer app launchers, the contextual app launchers, they will actually pull in apps onto your screen that you don't even have loaded yet.
Right.
And Apple just doesn't let developers do that.
Right.
And also the app ecosystem on Android is more connected. I can actually deep link into your app, which I can't do on iPhone. And the fact that Facebook is now coming out with linking for apps tells me that Apple is in a bad position here. They
I'm
really
surprised
should
Apple's going to allow that.
I would.
Doesn't I'm Apple shocked. Have the right to say, no, you cannot click a link in an app and launch another app?
I'm shocked that Apple hasn't done it themselves, because if Apple doesn't keep its app ecosystem up to date, people will start switching.
Right.
And, you know, already 90% of the market's on Android, so it doesn't take a whole lot more to get us off of this iPhone.
So, Marcus Brownlee, I'm just, you know, I hate to keep using you as the young person, but really your usage is what everybody cares about. They don't care how Scoble or I or even Brian Brushwood use this stuff. They care about how people in your age cohort use this stuff.
Right.
What are you and your cohort, how do you use this stuff? How aware are they, for instance, that this is even going on?
As a college student, just looking around at like the way people use apps and trying to, I guess, sign into stuff, it's obviously way easier to just sign in with your Facebook account and never worry about it again. There's also apps that use Google Plus, and if you have Google Plus, I use that for SoundCloud. Every time I set it up, it's just one click, so that's easy.
So they're not thinking about privacy particularly, or are they?
No, not a lot. I mean, I have certain classes where it's sort of a vocal minority where everyone in the class is concerned about it because it's a class about security or a class about innovation policy or something where we talk a lot about that stuff. But outside of that, it seems like not a whole lot of concern.
So I'm curious about Snapchat in that regard. Snapchat, which really did well out of the box because that was the app that you could take a picture and then say, and they can only look at it for 10 or 20 or 30 seconds. And it just took over the world. In fact, they turned down a $3 billion offer. Was it from Google or Facebook? I can't remember. I think Google, saying, no, we're going to be worth more than that. My daughter yesterday, she's sitting on the sofa. She said, oh, Dad, Snapchat just updated. I said, oh, really? She said, yeah, they added phone calls and texting. And so Snapchat clearly sees this as an opportunity. I think that could be a mistake, though. An application that gets too complicated. One of the reasons Snapchat was so popular is it was very straightforward.
Well, we're seeing the same thing with Twitter, right? Aren't they talking about kind of
disappearing tweets?
Conversations?
Yeah. Dick Costolo implied that they'd be doing it. They haven't done it yet. The whispering. Do your classmates use Snapchat, right, Marcus?
Yeah.
Yes. What was the reaction to the new app? Were they just kind of freaked?
I haven't seen the reaction to the new... Actually, I've seen one guy's reaction. So when I first saw it came out, all the coverage of it seemed to be very positive and glowing. But my initial impression was, wow, that's a lot more complicated than Snapchat was when it started out. So I wonder how... Are people even going to try to use this a lot, or are they just going to keep using it the same way they used it before?
My son is 20. He says they are using it, and he really likes the...
Because it's disappearing texts as well right now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What did your friend say,
everybody
Marcus?
Was on Snapchat.
Yeah, but that was before the change. What did your friend say, Marcus?
My friend didn't know how to use it. He was like, oh, because I got the update next to him, and he was like, oh, is that the new Snapchat? I was like, yeah. So he was like, okay, I'll grab the update, and he updated it, and he was like, okay, I don't know what's going on anymore. There's more swipes, and there's
yeah. My daughter, stuff. Same thing. She's 22. Yeah. She said, I think
a lot of people are going to try to continue using it the way they were before. And if they happen to stumble upon another thing that they kind of like, then, oh, hey, that's a bonus. I'll start using that more too. But I didn't really get any like walkthrough or instructions of, hey, this is the new feature you just got. Like,
it's the video is really cool. If you swipe down, it actually switches the camera to the front-facing camera.
M8 does that now.
And it's pretty well done. Yeah. If you actually do play with it, it's pretty well done.
But that's the question. Is it better to be an app that does one thing well, which seems to be what Mark Zuckerberg's promoting, do one thing well, and we'll provide you with inter-app communications if you want to do other things?
I mean, first of all, it seems to me like the Facebook angle is, you know, they obviously are sitting on a mountain of cash and goodwill. However, they got there on a very fickle market. You know, all of Facebook was based on the fact that, you know, at the flip of a switch, all the cool kids ran over to Facebook away from MySpace. And it seems like now that they've got the cash, they're diversifying and buying stuff with massive potential, you know, the Oculus Rift purchase and Instagram and so on. And it makes sense for them to do this, but it makes me think of seeing the breaks on Twitter's growth, which is really shocking to me. And of course, you know, Wall Street, of course, taking a giant Snapchat, dump on the stock.
Snapchat is sending me a Snapchat. Chad, I'm going to call you Snapchat from now on.
Snapchat?
Snapchat.
I'm Snapchat.
Are you Snapchatting me?
I'm Snapchatting actually Justin Robert Young just because...
Because he could use the attention. Yeah. Yeah. So,
but yeah, I mean, the general idea is now instead of clicking on a chat and then clicking and holding to see something, all of your old stuff you can actually swipe over and now you're in a chat. So if I wanted to...
Oh, so if I have a picture from a girl, I can now chat with her.
So you just swipe to the left.
Right. So you just swipe... Yeah, sure. Or anyone, really.
My position is if you need a tutorial, it's too complicated. You should just stop.
Well, you know, what's funny, what they did was Snapchat actually sent everyone a big old snap, which explaining all of the features. And you know, it was over in your stories and stuff like that to see it. But... I mean, it's interesting. I think that I saved something from maybe Scott Johnson. Did I? No. So what you could do is when someone sends you something that you like, or I can hear. Let me go test something. So send something to Wes Wilson. How about that? And I'm just going to say, hey.
You already lost me. I don't even.
And you send it. You can, if you tap on it and it's, see how it's bold now? Now if I move away, it's going to save that. So you can actually save texts.
No, it's too complicated.
Dude, I hate to say it, man, but I tuned out halfway
Me
through
too.
That. The mere fact that I'm not paying attention is
too.
A bad news.
It's too hard.
Simplicity reigns, man. Convenience over fidelity.
So here's my new Snapchat. I put it on here and I use it just to see what's going on and then I take it off because I don't want anybody to think that I'm using Snapchat.
That you use Snapchat?
Yeah.
That's a problem.
Okay, now I have to log in. Wait a minute. Oh, never mind. Forget. So I'm uninstalling it again. I think that that Facebook's making a very compelling argument to just do one thing well. You know, WhatsApp. Don't add a lot of features to WhatsApp. Instagram, they didn't change it, did they? But we will and we'll provide the platform across which you can interact. You can be in an ecosystem where people are going to use you. Because really, these app guys, they don't mind. The only thing they want is a user base, right? So they can make an exit. So
I mean, does this make Facebook's one most valuable asset basically a terms of service agreement that allows them to share information and have access to their walled garden? I mean, is that really the biggest benefit to Facebook to everyone? Is that we got your login and we have all of your permission to share stuff?
No, it's infrastructure, it's ease of use, it's user base. Yeah. Everybody wants user base. And if you can scale, if you can get a, look at WhatsApp. If you can get to, say, 300 million users, you're worth $16 billion.
Facebook,
that's all you need?
Facebook wants to know your emotional connection to people, places, and things so they can filter the feed out and addict you, which gets you to see advertising. It's an easy model to figure out.
I'm just going to Snapchat somebody.
And the fact that they're building an ecosystem where your ads are going to be shoved into apps and shoved into other places, and your identity system is going to be used all over the web, that just ensures that they know what you're doing to serve you ads. It's not that hard to figure out what they're doing.
Well, this takes me to a Princeton professor and sociologist who decided that she did not want big data to see what she was up to. She and her husband are expecting. And she's decided that she doesn't want big data, whatever big data means, to know. I'm talking about Janet Vertesi. She's an assistant professor of sociology at Princeton University. Yep. She said it was the hardest thing in the world. But you know what? She lost her credibility right away with me because she said, I am a conscientious objector to Google, but I'm still on Facebook.
Yeah.
So right there I go, well,
they
lady.
They all are studying who you are, lady. What you do, what your behaviors are to serve you
she
better.
She says,
content.
I've been on Facebook about 10 years since it first opened to the Ivies. I got off Google 2 years ago when they changed their privacy policies. So don't use any Google products. I was already a conscientious objector to Google, but I'm very active online. Strike two.
Yeah.
I'm not fearful of that technology. It was really an experimental thing. What would it look to try to do it? What would it look like to do it without walking away from Facebook or Twitter? So the first thing they said is, okay, we're expecting, but don't tell any, don't put it on, don't mention it on social media. She told her friends, don't tweet it. She said, we don't put it online. We're doing an experiment. Then she said, whenever we searched for anything baby related, we did it on Tor, so the privacy network. So nobody would know that it was her searching.
Yeah.
And then when they bought stuff, they created a fake email account on Amazon. And when they would buy something, they'd have it delivered to an Amazon locker in Manhattan. So they didn't have her home address. And she says, we stocked it with Amazon gift cards that we bought with cash to draw a distinction between our online lives and our offline lives. So
keep in mind, like, if she really wanted to keep it quiet, all she had to do was pay cash for diapers at Target, right?
Well, and don't go on the internet.
This is insistent to try. Yeah, exactly.
And don't do any searches about baby stuff.
Right.
And don't click on any baby ads on Facebook.
Okay, so she says it was a lot of work. I didn't expect it to be this hard. It was extremely impractical, very inconvenient. But this is the thing I would say. What have you gained by all of this effort? What have you gained?
No baby ads.
Well, don't you want baby ads?
No. But basically, the thing they're trying to compete to do, all of these businesses, and people are like, oh, our privacy, I don't want corporations doing. Why? Because the corporation's goal is to beat the other guys of offering you precisely what you need at the exact moment that you need
it. They don't want to give you power mower ads. They want to give you diaper ads. Well, isn't that what you want?
Exactly.
I'm with you, man.
I'm very puzzled.
I'm an all in guy. There is a new digital divide.
There is
a new digital divide though between people like this who are trying to stay offline. Richard Stallman and I had dinner, and he has a button say pay cash for everything, and he certainly is not on
Stallman,
Facebook.
Of course, the creator of GNU, the GNU project, and one of the original MIT hackers.
But he doesn't use credit cards and he doesn't use Facebook.
Well,
so
fine.
He wants,
good for him.
Yeah. But he's at a disadvantage to people like me who the system does.
I'm just saying, what is the
penalty?
The only way you can make a penalty, Dvorak does this every time, is if you imagine some draconian scenario. Like, I don't know, Google gets taken over by Adolf Hitler, and now he's got all the data. Or Facebook is actually a front for the CIA, and now they've got all the... But what is really happening? All they want to do...
Didn't your baby have to get a birth certificate at the hospital?
Yeah, by the way, from day one, when Henry was born 19 years ago, we started getting offers because of the hospital. The hospital sells your information immediately.
Oh, yeah.
And they give you a gift basket. And then right up to when he was 18, and the Selective Service emailed him and said, now you have to register for the draft. For 18 years, they knew exactly, they followed him. We moved three times. They followed him. He kept getting all those mail. That's what they do, and you didn't need Google or big data to do it.
Well,
I ask you again, what is the horrible outcome?
I bet you claimed them as a deduction on your taxes, right?
Yeah,
so he's in the system somewhere.
I don't care. So what? He has to register for the Selective Service. It's not like he can avoid it. So what is exactly the harm? I understand people don't want to. And you know what? You don't have to. Don't use the internet. You got to go to a lot of trouble, but you can do that. I don't understand what they're worried about.
I think part of the thing is we want to believe that we are not creatures of that are that predictable. We don't want to believe that we're just coins that get flipped.
We are.
But we are, yeah. And as we've said on the show before, it's like, you know, you exist as a feedback loop. You know, who you are is what you do determines who you are. And if you think about it, the ability to know your past actions as a predictor of what you're about to do is really just the concept of reputation. As much as people get misty-eyed and talk about, oh, why can't it be like it used to be when we'd all were in small towns and everybody knew who everyone was? Guess what? We're coming back to those days, and it's because of technology and the internet. I don't know that it's terrible. I've been driving my car around. I bought a car like 7 years ago. And it's getting old, and I've been thinking about buying a new one. Sure enough, out of nowhere, CarMax sends me an email saying like, hey, man, we bet your car is getting kind of old. Have you thought about buying a new one? And it's like, I don't know that that's terrible. That is exactly as evil as thinking to call someone on their birthday and say you really value their friendship. You know what I mean? It's a matter of...
I understand people want to
control the effort and timing.
People want to control this data. I understand. But it doesn't help to use scary words like targeting you or big data. These are kind of scary, intentionally, I think, scary words to make you fear something. And I'm not sure exactly I understand the
when
real
I talk
harm.
About it, I use the scary words is true.
If you're scared of a police state, be scared of a police state. There's lots to be scared of with a police state.
Yeah, when I crossed the Golden Gate Bridge on the way here, there's a robot taking a picture of my driver's license, my car license plate.
What are they going to do with that?
Well, I know where you were on Friday the 3rd of...
What? Who cares? Seriously, what is the damage? What is the harm here?
For me, nothing.
You can do things. It's as Professor Vertese pointed out, it's a lot of work to stay out of these databases. I understand that people wish they could control their privacy, etc. But I'm just not sure
Here's what I think it is, and go ahead, you know, pencil me as being off the deep end on this, but I think there's a deep-seated cultural desire for us to not believe that, with all apologies to Padre SJ, that the Catholics were right, that there really are an all-seeing eye that knows all the filthy, dirty things that we do to ourselves when nobody's looking.
Yeah.
That has been, throughout all of human history, been a tool used by all religions in order to enforce people to be good. And now it's a reality. It's a fact that if not
you woke
seeing
up,
you
by
do the,
way, the
actual deed, we saw all the bits that led up to it, and we're pretty sure, you know, it's like, well, we're looking at your credit card bill. You sure did go to the liquor store 12 times last month, so I think you got a problem, you know, that kind of thing. We don't want to believe that. We reject that idea. We want to believe we're captains of our own lives. And to know that, number one, our behaviors are predictable, that they're so predictable that large corporations will bank money on the fact that it's like, well, he's done A, B, C, and D. He's definitely into F. Which, for the record, I am into F. Fine, you got this.
You're DTF, man.
Yeah. So it's interesting watching the chat room, too, because people are like, why don't you put some misinformation? No, that would screw up the ads you're going to get and the offers.
You know
and
what
the
upsets
thing,
people?
You know?
And this always comes down to this. Well, but the Amazon recommendations are so bad. They get upset because...
That's the whole point.
It's not working well.
Yes. Yeah. Well, exactly. And plus, like, Google Ads is good at one thing. Advertising crap I just bought. That's the reason you're sending me these ads.
Well, that's why.
Although I will say, it's fascinating to me. Like, when I wanted to surprise my wife on her 40th with a ski vacation, I had to do everything in incognito mode because I knew if I just searched one thing, ski equipment, Utah or whatever, then every ad was going to be like, hey, man, you going on a ski vacation to Utah?
Okay, there's a detriment.
You found a detriment. Yeah. Yeah.
It's hard to hide gifts.
I had a similar thing where I was making a video specifically on the most overpriced things on Amazon. So I would have, I'd be able to like share this stuff with people and have the links and everything. And one thing that I found was a $120,000 paper shredder. And I just kept coming back to that because I kept sharing that link with people. And soon enough, Amazon starts asking me like once a week, hey, here's a bunch of paper shredders. I figured you were interested in buying a paper shredder, cause just because I visited that link one or two times making that video. So I feel like everyone who visited the link after watching that video probably got an email about, hey, here's 12 paper shredders you might want to check out. So the algorithm's kind of
there needs heavy to be like an irony filter. Like, it's not like I'm the looking end of the at world, it because I want to laugh at it.
What's the, I mean, so she got off Google 2 years ago because it knew she was engaged before anybody else did. So what happened? It meant that she sent an email to somebody on Gmail and they had the word engaged in it. So Google showed her a jewelry store.
Yeah.
And she freaked out about that. Like, there's a human that knows that she's, no, there's no human.
You know, Google knows when I'm doing things before anybody
else. Nobody knows nothing.
Because I put them on my freaking calendar.
But it doesn't matter because
I'm already married, so if I'm getting a divorce, the first thing I'm going to do is put my meeting with my lawyer onto the Google calendar. Google's going to know what I'm doing long before anybody else.
Oh, my gosh. You know, and that's where this, now you just stepped into it, Robert. This is why people get freaked out about it, because when there's algorithms that say, huh, you just bought a sports car, huh? You're working out an awful lot. So, okay, so you're having an affair.
Midlife
crisis.
Pretty
soon you're going to get a divorce. Yeah. Let's go ahead and just file
divorce
that in
lawyers.
There. Yeah, exactly, right? I mean, that's what people don't want. That's the, in every way, the nightmare scenario.
It's here. It's here. I mean, somebody in the chat room mentioned the Target finding out that a girl's
that's what
was pregnant before her father did.
Right.
And it's here. This is our world, you know, and if we don't like that world, we have to figure out how to.
I just don't see like it's that bad.
I don't see it as that bad either.
I don't. And people do a lot of, well, what if the insurance companies then.
And there's a lot of the what ifs, but I don't see any. I don't see any. That's all hypotheticals.
Well, and plus also, here's the thing. You can get upset about all the what ifs once there is no alternative. The fact is there's so many alternatives. You could use Hushmail. You can create individual accounts. You can create pseudonyms. You can go through all the steps of informational hygiene that it takes in order to protect your information. And all this story shows is, yes, it's a big pain in the butt and for very little benefit. And we all agree, yes, that's the case. In which case, but the fact that we still absolutely from beginning to end control all of this tells me that I'm with you, Leo. I don't see that it's a big deal. Now, certainly, if it's any kind of government entity, I get very, very, you know, uppity. But as long as the end goal of the corporations is to figure out how to serve me better than the other guy, it's really hard for me to get fired up.
Look at Google now. That is such a benefit that comes out of them knowing a lot about me.
Or take it into an app like TripIt. A TripIt knows I give TripIt access to my Gmail, which if we had been on Leo's show 15 years ago and said, oh, someday we're going to give emails or third-party apps access to our email.
I would have told you not to do it.
and now I have like 15 apps that have access to my Gmail.
I know, and it's so useful.
I was in a plane in Chicago coming home. We were on the tarmac, and TripIt says, your plane's being canceled. Buy another ticket out of town. I click on the ticket. I buy one. There was only 3 seats on the next plane. And then 2 minutes later, the pilot comes on and says, we're going back to the gate. And so I'm in an all-in world where I'm going to use all this stuff, and I'm going to give it as much data as possible to help my life be better. And people like this lady are going to stay all out, and she's going to have to stay in Chicago. Sorry.
Google, though, must acknowledge this because they just – announced that they're not going to scan student Gmail accounts for ads anymore.
This seems to me like such a bogus story. Like, again, this is that same magnanimousness that that Facebook just showed. Like, the fact that they're only holding it to, you're like, yes, it is creepy because of students. Totally not creepy the rest of the time. Like I don't see. It's just so much noise to me. I didn't like this story.
First of all, I don't see very many ads in Gmail, and when I do, they're in the promotion folder, and they're not going to turn off the promotional folder, so they're still scanning your email, just they're not going to put an ad on there.
They're going to scan your email if you have any email service that doesn't have that has spam protection is scanning your email.
Districts. They're going to go to the school district and go, hey, you want to buy Chromebooks for all your students here.
Well, that's why
it's $250. You get everything.
30 million students use the free Google apps for education. So that, I mean, I can understand why they would do that. Don't you think that's a.
And they're going to hit those students with ads somewhere else on the,
yeah,
on
no,
the search.
Yeah, right. See, here's the thing.
They don't even have to hit them with ads. Just get them to use Google. And then when they get out of school, they can get them.
Somebody
I mean,
in the chat room
the
just
thing
said.
Is, Occam's razor here. The only reason that they would give up 30 million abilities to scrub emails is if, compared to the whole pie,
right,
that's an infinitesimal. Like they feel like they're getting 30 million scrubs worth of publicity out of this.
Somebody in the chat room said it's disturbing that all of us are so on board with this stuff. I think it's disturbing when you guys are so stuck in the mud and not using this stuff and saying, oh, I'm not going to be on Facebook. What are you talking about? There's 1.1 billion people. You want to email Leo and get to Leo? I guarantee you can't get him on email. You can get him on Facebook.
Don't tell him that.
And also, well, and I'm going to differ with you on this, Robert. I'm not a get with the program kind of guy. Just because everyone else is doing it is not a good reason for you to do it as well. But definitely let me know what it is you're afraid of, because that's the thing that I don't get. And that's what I resonated with what Leo just said.
My only issue is I hope we don't lose services because of this kind of moral panic about the technology, and people keep, you know, Google says, well, for instance, Google Glass has face recognition. But we're not going to turn it on because people would get upset by that notion. And
by the way,
that would
can do face recognition without using face recognition.
Well, it's
incredibly
valuable.
Your phone is going to have a beacon at Google I.O. They're going to announce beacons for Android. So all I have to do is know that I'm aiming at your phone, and your phone is going to be spitting a number into the air, three numbers actually.
That's all these hijinks that they had to go through.
See, oh, I'm standing next to Leo Laporte on my glass without doing face recognition.
Well, Facebook does that right now, right? It knows your Facebook who's nearby and all
that. Yep, that's a new feature.
But they have to tread so carefully because people are so I guess what I'm saying is, look, you have the right to privacy, and I'm not denying your right to privacy, and if you don't like it, you shouldn't use these services. That's fine. I'm not going to say anything against that. That's completely within your power. But what I don't want people to do, people who have this fear of technology and this kind of moral panic, is to keep the rest of us from using things like Google Now or face recognition in Glass, because those would be phenomenally useful. And if we don't feel like there's an issue with it, now, I guess you can't use face recognition because you don't have the agreement of the person you're recognizing. You can use iBeacons because I'd have to obviously turn it on my phone.
Yep.
So I understand that. But
somebody's in the chat room just says, I don't see the possible all the possible downsides. You didn't read my book. There's lots of downsides. But none of you in the chat room have said a damn thing about what's the downsides of these things. Tell me what the downsides are.
Is it gonna
get, I'm going to get more ads.
Let me ask Marquez.
You're going to get ads no matter what. I can promise you that. Yeah. You're just going to get better ads.
Of course you are. And better content, by the way. Facebook, the news feed is learning about where you are, who you're connected to, and it algorithmically picks things that you might be interested in. They are trying to addict you. That's what they're trying to do. That's the real downside is addiction, which you guys didn't mention in the chat room. And they're very good at it. They want to put things in front of you that you are going to click like on or share comment on or share with your friends, and they're going to try to get rid of the noise, and therefore you're going to get addicted to this stuff, and the addiction does have deep implications for us.
Let me pivot this just a little bit and ask a question specifically to Marquez, because what we're talking about in general is the emergence of persistent reputations in our online interactions. That's what seems to disturb a lot of people. And we see this trend where in the early days of the internet in the late 90s, everyone could say anything, you could post anything, and you didn't worry about it ever coming back to bite you in the butt. But we've seen bit by bit that window closing. And most recently over the last year, we saw a shift in the way YouTube handled their comments, because YouTube comments used to be, I used to ask people, which would you rather do, get paper cuts on your eyeballs or read YouTube comments? And universally, everyone's blind because they have so many paper cuts on their eyes. But then the switch to Google Plus, as clumsily as that was handled and as much of a backlash as there was, how have you seen things change in the comments on your YouTube videos? Do you find it to be more civil now that more people are using their actual name, or if not, they have a persistent reputation to account for?
Okay. So depends on where you look on YouTube, right? So obviously I do tech videos, so I'm like reviewing products. So 80% of the comments are pretty civilized for the most part. So I didn't necessarily see a big change in the way people commented on my videos. The worst thing that would happen on my videos is people like screaming fanboy, like the typical, you know, reviewer comments that you would see on like a tech website where, hey, I thought this was biased, blah, 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 but, you know, don't pay attention to my username. But then there's the other side of YouTube, not the other side, but there's plenty of other niches in YouTube, like comedy videos, for example, like people who, you know, leave comments like, oh, this isn't funny at all, or I just hated this so much. And they would just hide behind a sort of an anonymous username. And the people who did that got really mad about YouTube or Google Plus comments now requiring you to use your name. And that's something that bothered a lot of people. But inevitably, it's just what kind of stuff do you want to be tied to your name? What kind of stuff do you not care about being tied to your name? So a lot of the stuff, like I said, on my comments on my videos, not a big problem, not a big change. Engagement didn't really spike or decrease or anything like that. But I feel like on other parts of YouTube where people will be more tempted to leave more ridiculous comments or comments they wouldn't want to be associated with themselves, they saw differences in maybe comedy videos or other genres that I'm not really as
well. And what's interesting is I know I read an article recently about the plight of girl gamers who get a lot of sexist, hateful comments in their inbox after gaming sessions for Call of Duty or whatever. And it makes me wonder, like, what kind of comments are the ones that number one would be legitimate, helpful comments that number two you wouldn't want associated with your name? How often does that happen? Can you think of an example of that?
Just in the tech videos, I see people who are like, you know, trying to, half of them are people who are not making videos and they don't want people to know that they're just bashing on everything that they hate. So they can just feel free to lash out at anyone they want, take out any negative thoughts they want to have and just put them wherever they want and no one will know it's them. So if you don't have that anonymity, then you're not going to do that anymore. You don't want that tied to your name forever because that's your Google account and you can't like hide that. So
I mean, it does
what
seem
if you?
Like,
I could think of a scenario. What if you worked for Samsung and you wanted to say to Marquez, "Yeah, we really got a problem with this piece of hardware." You're not going to do it, but that's a. I mean, so what? That's a minor. Loss.
Well, and
there,
plus,
right?
Also, there's an ecosystem for that, right? You've got stuff like
that's always the
secret app or whatever.
Secret. That's always the exception that people point out: whistleblowers and the like, Edward Snowden, people who would like to speak truth to power but can't safely do it. And in this country, it's a lot safer than it is in a lot of other countries. So I understand there's a need for anonymity. But boy, the internet comments, chat rooms, places like that. We allow people to use handles in chat rooms, in our chat room. I don't know. Maybe if we made them use their real name, we'd have fewer troll problems.
Well, see, I don't care what you call yourself as long as you keep calling yourself the same thing.
Well, but
that's
the point. You can hide behind a handle.
Yeah, sure. And there ain't nothing wrong with that. That's cool.
I do feel bad. If I were a female YouTuber, I would be very happy about this change. YouTube comments were pretty horrendous for a long time.
Well, and plus also, think about this. If what we want is the web to be a legitimate place for business where real deals are secured and real
losses.
That's
why Google and Facebook do it, because they want real identity.
Yep.
Exactly.
Well, but that's for a commercial reason as opposed, I mean, and there are reasons.
And we're not the customer, we're the product, right?
That's another example of things that people say, if you're not, you know, I'm paying for it, you're the product.
Mark Zuckerberg
that sounds negative.
We don't pay Facebook for anything. We're
everybody
the product
who watches,
that are sold.
You could say about Twit that everybody who watches Twit is the product.
In some way, that's sort of true.
Yeah, but my point is that is a very simplifying kind of thing to say. I mean, it's not untrue, I guess, but that doesn't say the whole story, right? We do Twit because we are interested in talking about this stuff, because we want to give people this information. We feel very strongly. The real truth about it is it's ad supported because that seemed to be the best way to make it available to the widest possible audience. But if you say, and it isn't exactly untrue to say, well, if you didn't pay for Twit, you're the product. No, that's true. The reason we can make money doing ads is because people watch. So your attention is of value to us. But it's not the only reason we do this. It's not of...
Right.
And so that implies that people
If you don't
do
have
think,
the good content, nobody watches,
well,
so you don't have advertising.
Mark Zuckerberg did Facebook because he just wanted to use people and make money off of them. Or we do Twit just because we want to use people and make money. And that's not the reason we do Twit. And I'm going to give Mark some credit and assume that's not the reason he does Facebook. So it's a very, I don't like that. I mean, I've said it and I've used it, but I don't like that idea because I think it's oversimplifying the truth of it.
Yeah, I totally agree with this. And this is the problem that we have with robber barons of all varieties is that it's easy to overstate like, well, they're getting rich, therefore they must be screwing us in some way. But in every single case, the way they're getting rich is by offering something cheaper, faster, better, right. That is of value to so many people that they make it happen. And even now,
that's a very good point, actually.
I mean, to be honest, that's part of the reason that we resent them is because they make it look so easy or whatever. But I suspect that what is happening in general is only empowering more individuals. And yes, it is weird to watch somebody profit obscenely. And I think it's fine to say an obscene amount of money, as I understand money for it, for what seems like it should be obvious. But all the greatest, all the most important discoveries always seem obvious in retrospect. And they always seem like, well, why did that person deserve to make all that money? Because it turns out that there is a value to limiting interactions to only 140 characters. And for that, Twitter deserved to make a bajillion dollars.
By the way, they're not making as bajillion dollars as they used to.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, no, we should talk about this.
In fact, we just made more money on Twitter than Twitter did in the same amount of time. Just want to point that out. If you actually, wouldn't that be a great thing? Who makes the most money, Twitter or Twit? Twitter makes very little money, right? Because
they lost money last quarter.
Yeah. Although you know, I'm watching. What was I watching? What were you watching? Jimmy Fallon. It's not late night anymore. The Tonight Show, and they use Twitter very effectively. They use hashtags. They do it like crazy.
Yep.
And I imagine that that's good for their ratings, that there is promotion. You know, he had a lip sync contest with Emma Stone, and I saw a lot of social media action around it, lots of views on YouTube, lots of tweets about it. That's probably good for their ratings, I would guess, and certainly makes it a more valuable show. But Twitter is not seeming to see too much about it. And as a result, the Twitter stock is sinking. You know, I don't know if the stock market is a way to judge a company.
No, in fact, I go nuts when we talk about stock, because all stock is you know, an expectation put right to numbers. But
it does point a problem, which is that the growth is slowed. It's still growing.
Yes,
this is a goal. So you got to be very clear. It's still growing. Yeah. It's just not growing as fast.
Well, the problem is Facebook has 1.1 billion people.
Right.
Twitter has, what, 300 billion?
255 million active users, okay. A quarter of that.
And so Twitter should be growing faster than Facebook because they have more open ground to grow. And they're not. And that tells you something about how strong Facebook is, because Facebook has your real social graph, your friends.
Right.
And the connections to your friends are more emotional to most people, not some of you in the chat room, but to most people, a baby photo from my real family or friends is much more interesting to me than some news article.
I agree, but Facebook doesn't seem to be doing that in their news feed. Be a news source.
No.
I don't see my friends' posts.
Oh, I do all the time.
Oh, I see some, but I don't see all. You don't see. I guarantee you, Robert, you do not see all of your friends' posts.
No, but
posts.
What I've done is put my family on a list so I can see all my family.
Oh, you've worked a way around it.
Yeah.
But most people don't do that. You go to your news feed.
No, but look at all the crap my family posts.
And Facebook has decided that the news feed should be news, not my friends and family.
I guarantee
family.
You, if there's a baby that was born in your social graph, you're going to see that photo, because Facebook is actually pretty good at putting good stuff up on your feed.
Mostly my friends are dying not having babies.
Well,
so that's
a whole other problem.
That's part of the problem.
We'll have to have a tweet
pretty
on that.
Pretty soon it'll be obituaries, not used to be. Starts with babies, weddings, then babies, then the obituaries. No, I mostly see like 15 forgotten movies you should watch. 22 celebrities that look nothing alike. That's what I see in my Facebook feed. I would like to see some babies. Some weddings. All right, let's take a break. That really killed the subject there. We're going to. You want to see a dog and a cat dancing to Happy by Pharrell?
Heck yeah.
All right. That's in my Facebook feed, ladies and gentlemen. Happy dogs and a cat in Australia. And while we're watching this, this is going to get us pulled from YouTube for no reason. Because this is stupid.
Well, then by all means, let's talk about an important sponsor instead.
Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, our show today brought to you by our friends at Citrix, who do go-to meeting with HD faces. I know businesses because, you know, nowadays businesses are spread all out. Teams are in different locations. Clients and even colleagues are, you know, across the globe. Go to meeting lets you stay together, stay in touch. And I, you know, we're still humans. Face to face is still number one. You got to see somebody face to face. GoToMeeting started by allowing you to share your screen so you could stay on the same page, literally see the documents, collaborate on the documents, you know, give you a PowerPoint. But adding this HD faces now, this makes it like really like you're in person. And I know teams who are distributed all over the world who keep GoToMeeting running all day because you pay one low flat monthly rate for as long as you want, for as many meetings as you want. So just keep it on all day. And they're working together. They're collaborating. It's great. Anytime we do a conference call, sure, we could just do the conference bridge, but I use GoToMeeting in case we want to tune on the video or we want to show a document. It's just it's really helpful to have. GoToMeeting with HD Faces from Citrix. It is the powerfully simple way to meet in person, online, anywhere, anytime, to brainstorm, to develop quality ideas, to solve, to cut the Gordian knot, to just solve problems. When you get elected to lieutenant governor, I want you to bring this to the state house and say, yeah, everybody, tell the assembly, we got to meet online. Start your free 30-day trial of GoToMeeting today. Visit GoToMeeting.com. Click the try it free button. Use a promo code TWIT. GoToMeeting.com. Promo code TWIT. I hope politicians start making this a place to come for your campaign. You could come on here. You could talk. I think that's great. We have a candidate for California State Lieutenant Governor in studio, as we could tell, because he's well-dressed. And the rest of you look like slobs. No, you all look good. But I think that's cool. I think that's cool. I wonder, do you think I think politicians need to use social media, Facebook and Twitter effectively. Don't you think that's important? Now, Robert, you're looking at your Facebook. Now, what is that, a baby picture? No.
No.
It's some stupid poster.
No, it's something his friend sent me, yeah. Tagged me in.
How about a cat video?
I'll find a cat video.
I got one. This is a cat dancing.
Like, I feel like I failed the show just now because I ran to go to the bathroom and grab a soda, and I come back just in time to hear, how about a cat video? And I feel like I failed you by eating for any amount of
isn't
time.
Isn't that what you're known for is cat videos, Brian?
Brian, cat video brush.
That's what they say. Don't have Schwood on. They'll bring his cat videos again.
I found a baby dancing video, but not a cat video. Cat videos are hard to find on my feed because I keep hiding them.
Oh, that's interesting. Does Facebook hear those signals?
Oh, yeah. Facebook learns from what you do. Yeah. If you hide certain kinds of posts, you're not going to see them as often.
All right. Nice of them to listen.
I mean, so again, I should hide like that's what people are freaking out about is the fact that a service provider listens and strives to provide exceptional service. And yes, I know there's a million ways it could be abused before you guys send me emails and messages on it. But so far, like, we haven't seen those. We haven't seen anybody totally victimized by big data manipulating them. Instead, people are outraged like, I got a coupon. That's really useful. That's exactly what I wanted today.
I found a cat video for you.
I was joking.
God, there's nothing that's going to stop you guys from looking at a goddamn cat
joking.
Video.
I don't want to see.
A cat hates the singing cat birthday card.
No.
Oh, come on. It's entertainment.
A new MacBook is here, ladies and gentlemen. And here's an interesting story. It's $100 less, has a faster processor. But according to benchmarks, it's got a way slow hard drive. I don't know if Apple's trying to save money by putting a much slower SSD in there, but it was one third as fast as last year's 11-inch MacBook Air for unzipping files. That's painful. That's not good. So just a word of warning.
Well, and this is difficult too, because if you're going to make your bones by having exquisitely fine hardware, you need to keep doing that because your reputation is everything.
It's going to get better every time. It's now there, it's a shock when something gets worse. I know it's $100 less, but when it gets
but this is a case, like, think about it. When they launched MacBook Air meant one thing. So thin, it was like magic. Like it was the highest end of the high end. And we all enjoyed reading stories of rich assholes throwing them away in the trash because they couldn't even know that they were there. But now,
wasn't that you?
No, I wish.
Oh, no, now, it was Clayton Morris. It was somebody.
Now, though, the MacBook Air just means the entry level base, whatever. And it's, I don't know, that's a real bummer to see that value of that brand drop.
But what it shows you is interesting because, I mean, $899 is not a cheap computer by any regard, but it seems cheap from Apple, right? Wow, it's the lowest cost computer except for the Mini, but it's
cheapest laptop they make.
Yeah. So wow, $899, but you would but really, in truth, in the normal world, $899 is a fairly pricey computer, and you don't expect a drop in performance. So just a word of warning, I guess.
But if you're a student and you get told, right, hey, you should get a MacBook,
right?
Then you look up what's the cheapest one. MacBook I can get. That's right. Going to be the one.
In fact, I think a lot of I mentioned this when it was announced earlier this week. The high school that I consult for stopped buying MacBooks because they didn't have anything low price enough. It's a one-to-one program, so everybody going to the school gets a laptop. They use Lenovo. There's Lenovo for education. Windows laptops are given kids.
They're not going Chromebooks?
That just hurt me. It seems like Chromebook is the right thing to do,
yeah,
frankly.
Most of the schools that I talk to are going
21% Chromebook. Now in schools is Chromebooks. Yeah.
Holy cow. You know, my daughter is in fourth grade, and already they've centered everything on the Google environment. So she's got her own Google ID, uses Google Docs. I just walked in. She was writing a paper smart in Google move. Drive. It is. It's a very smart move. Yeah. And it's a good we've talked about this before. You know, we've talked about the movement to doing everything in the cloud seems dumb because what happens when there's no cloud? Like, those days are gone. There's never going to be a day where there's no cloud. It's like having no cloud in 10 years will be as weird as the power going out. Do you remember just like 30 years ago?
Right.
It was not weird at all. Yeah, once a month for the power to go out.
Yeah. 1 minute and 20 seconds of my life every day is cloudless when I go through the tunnel.
You should pay. You know what, my friend? Pay attention to the road. Stop tweeting in the tunnel.
And I cached all my Spotify. Did you know that too? You can, if you go to the right settings, you can cache all your Spotify.
I use
Spotify.
Google Music. Same thing. You pin it.
Can we talk about, and the only way this will go bad is if, I don't know, something were to violate net neutrality. Can we talk about this whole FCC situation?
Yeah, we can talk about it. We absolutely. By the way, it was David Pogue who accidentally threw out his MacBook Air because it was so thin. It was in a stack of papers. And threw it away.
Well, I take it back. When I said a-hole, I meant delightful individual.
Delightful.
That's what I meant.
Singing fool, David Pogue. This is actually a little bit of an old story. We talked about it last week on Twit, but I certainly don't mind bringing it up again because it ain't over till the fat commissioner sings. Tom Wheeler, who is a tame lobbyist for the National Cable Television Association, former president there, and the wireless industries, he's in both halls of fame. So he really gets around. He's also, oddly enough, the chairman of the government group that's supposed to regulate these industries. I don't know how that could possibly. That doesn't seems like that would be a problem. He's the chairman of the FCC, and he's proposed new FCC rules, none of which we have seen. Denise Howell pointed this out last week, and apparently we still have not seen these. The commissioners will be voting, I think, next week on these, and then they'll be up for comment, saying, hey, you know what, this whole open internet thing, it's nice, but the Telecommunications Act doesn't really allow us to do that, so here's what we're going to do. Since the law says we can't regulate this, we're going to just stop. And if you are a internet service provider and you want to charge an edge provider like Twit or YouTube or Netscape to get to your customers, you go right ahead and do that. Now, of course, that's really in violation of everything we hold near and dear. And as Senator Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts tweeted, she said, I don't think we know what the next big thing is going to be in the United States, but one thing we can be pretty sure of, it's going to be online. And that startup isn't going to have the kind of money that a YouTube or it gives companies like Netflix and YouTube the power to pull up the ladder.
Yep.
Well, okay.
But before you say your thing, and I'm going to let you, I will give you something you can do about it. The FCC has opened a mailbox for comment, openinternet@fcc.gov. So whether you love this or you hate it, you can let them know how you feel about it. You know how I feel about it. Go ahead. Brian Brushwood.
Well, I am very conflicted over this whole thing, and I honestly don't know. I'm gonna play the dumb card on this because on the one hand, you know, we're hearing so many of the right words come out of Wheeler. That's his name, right? Wheeler's mouth, talking about the importance of competition and of doubling down, making sure everyone has access. These are all things that we want to hear. But then in the same breath, he's like, also, we should have a fast lane available for people who feel like paying with it, which makes me cringe. But then I think about the whole breakdown of the peering agreements with Netflix. Netflix in peak hours takes up a third of all internet traffic. Netflix okay. wants to work out a deal.
I understand your concern, and this you're confusing two issues.
Right.
So Netflix pays currently for peering, and this is not what we're talking about. That's different. So Netflix, and there is a big argument there. God knows Netflix is not happy. In fact, Verizon is now saying, hey, by the way, you can give us some money too. But you could make the argument they are using a lot of bandwidth, so maybe they should be paying for peering because it's not a symmetric relationship. It's not what we're talking about. What Wheeler's proposed rules would do is let edge providers, that means everybody who provides content, Twit, you, Brian, everybody, can now pay for improved access. That's a different thing. That's not a peering relationship. That's just, that means the cable companies and the phone companies. Now, well, AT&T's already doing it with, what do they call it? They allow a company to pay them so that it won't count against your bandwidth cap. So that's the same thing. And so they're already doing it. Comcast will absolutely do this if these rules go through. That's different. That's them going to each edge provider, each content creator, and saying, oh, by the way, you have to pay us too.
Now, this surprises me that you're so universally against it, as the stated goal because let's say we didn't know that we were talking about the internet. If I said there's a thing and the guy regulating the thing wants to regulate it to preserve competition and wants to
he's lying. No. Yeah, okay, you're buying into Wheeler's big lie. First thing he does is publish a blog post, say, pay no attention. This is no change in rules. No. It's all fine. And enough people bought this. I was shocked. Companies like CNET published articles saying, oh, it's okay. But it's not. It is a very big change in rules. So don't get fooled by the big lie, and remember who pays Tom Wheeler.
It's not some two-person startup.
It's a revolving door at the FCC, and he will go right back to industry. The current chairman of the National Cable Television Association is Michael Powell, the former chairman of the FCC. It's a revolving door. These guys are going to go right back in industry, and they will be very much rewarded for changing the rules to
and
their
if
benefit.
If I'm at a cable company right now, I am scared to death because we are so close to getting what we need on internet-connected devices to get rid of all of our cable. We now are getting sports. We are now getting good enough news. And so what's left? And we're getting,
well, you know what they do. They
we're
raise...
getting content. We're getting custom content, right? House of Cards and... Amazon has a series of shows, right, that they paid for. So we're getting custom content on the internet. We're getting the sports.
The cable companies are not stupid. So what they're doing is they're raising the cost of internet alone to match the cost of cable plus internet. Yeah. They get you in the fold. They've been very careful about doing that.
And if they can charge Netflix.
Plus also, nowadays you can actually pay less for your cable if you accept. Or I'm sorry, you can pay less for your internet if
That's
you
right.
accept basic cable as well. I mean, they are so concerned about maintaining this fig leaf that everything's fine. Yeah.
I'm not naive. The chat room is really.
Don't pay attention to
thing to the. Here.
Don't pay. No, that's just some guy.
Everybody got to watch.
That's
the
not the audience. That's just some guy who just said that. Don't pay any attention. To that.
All right, just saying.
Don't worry
I'm
about
naive.
It.
I'm not.
Why
that
are you
naive.
Looking?
I work
at the
for
room.
An internet hosting company. Come on, I know what I know who owns. The
Oh,
pipes.
You are naive. You think that there's still fairies and unicorns? I know.
I do.
Well, I'll tell you this much. As far as the net neutrality thing, and this goes all the way back to, what, 3-4 years ago, Leo, when I first came on the show, my hope is that, and it's not just my hope, it's the EFFs as well. If you read the EFF stuff, they say stuff like, yes, it's important that we have universal access and that everyone get in. No, we're not crazy about the idea of government being the one to make sure that that happens. You know, I want to believe that net neutrality will remain this electrified third rail
that
nobody dare touch.
You're a free market nutball. You believe that if there is true competition, and you're right, by the way, if there's true competition in other words, if I had a choice of 10 internet service providers, this would all work out. And you're right. But you don't, do you? And who was it that set that up?
I mean, yes.
The FCC created a duopoly. At best, you have two choices in this country. So there is no competition. No, so the government created the problem to begin with.
I'm not going to say that Austin is representative of everyone, but I will say that...
Well, you have Google Fiber, but that's
What's funny is I don't. I'm 6 miles outside of the Austin city limits, which means I don't have Google Fiber. And plus, also, Google Fiber isn't even installed. But just the threat of Google Fiber caused AT&T to come in and offer a gigabit service outside of Austin. So they preemptively competed, which means I have AT&T U-verse, I have Clear, I have Time Warner cable, I've got DirectPC. I can even use, as many people do, we're seeing a lot of people not cutting the cable cord but cutting their internet cord as they instead use their mobile devices, so I can use AT&T wireless. And again, this is not ideal and it's not as fast as we'd like, but the fact is I have more choices than ever before.
The companies you could choose internet from?
There's your cable company,
and there's your phone company.
There's two competing cable companies.
Oh, you have two cable companies? That's very unusual.
Yeah,
that's correct. And then
you're maybe one of the few regions in the area. So you do have.
There's phone companies if I want a DSL. There's also satellite.
Wait a minute. You have more than one incumbent phone company?
Yes. I mean, what I'm saying is, if what I want is data service. My total list, and this is just off the top of my head, forgive me if it's not all-inclusive, we had Clear here in Austin. We have DirectPC, which is the satellite. We have AT&T Wireless and, of course, Verizon Wireless, all the wireless providers, and their plans are much, much better now. Right now, we're on a shared 10-gigabyte plan for the family. There's also two cable companies competing, one of them fiber optic, that this is what I'm on right now, is the 300 megabit up and down. And then on top of that, there's also for the fringes, because there's a lot of rural areas outside, they have individual radio-based services as well. So again, none of this is ideal. And sure, if I could have more, I would have more.
What are the caps on the wireless that you have?
My wireless, like for AT&T?
Yeah, just say out of curiosity, your DirecTV, your wireless caps, they are very low.
Yes.
They're not usably
service.
High.
Absolutely.
So absolutely. It's I don't a think service. You really you and you have an unusually good situation and it's still not that good.
Well, it's not as good as we'd like, but if you came to me 20 years ago and told me this is the future, I'd pee my pants, man. You're talking to a guy who paid $150 a month for crappy satellite service that I set up in my apartment on two cinder blocks to just get this signal so I could get four times DSL. I mean, the fact is, it's undisputable that it's getting better. And yes, we all want it to get better.
I just wonder,
faster.
Okay, so let's say that this goes through. Do you think, you're not in a situation, a much more typical situation here. We have Comcast and we have DSL. And the DSL will ride on AT&T's wires, but it might be a third party. The DSL is too slow unless you're within 2 kilometers of the central office. So I have Comcast. Do you think if this goes through that Comcast will then give me tiered service? We'll say, you want the bronze plan, you can have access to MySpace, Yahoo, and Dig. Or you can have the silver plan, we'll give you access to YouTube and Vivo and,
This is why I'm not afraid of this, is because the mere fact that you use this as an example, this is universally the nightmare scenario that everybody derides, laughs at, and says, screw the whole system if this is what they offer us. The mere fact that you can offer that knowing.
What would I do about it?
To be honest, it's not what you would do.
Well, it is because most people are in that situation. What is your choice then?
The answer is it's not about what you would do. It's about what the entrepreneurial spirited competitor would do. And they would recognize that nobody wants this. And they would come into that area because they would see a tremendous market opportunity.
Well, why haven't they done that already? Isn't there an opportunity now?
Well, because you just offered up a straw man that nobody's offering. Nobody's offering this bronze, silver service or whatever.
Well, if I were you, I'd be a little more worried than you are, Brian Brushwood, because if all of a sudden the providers who provide your stream for your show don't pay the fee and you get buffered to 90% of the United States, how are you going to feel about that? Is that going to foster your business?
Well, no, I certainly wouldn't like it, and I would immediately hold up a fistful of cash and say, who can offer me not this? And that's what I'm hoping everyone would do.
No, because you're an edge provider. You don't get a choice. You have to pay. A fistful of cash to who? To somebody who's going to give you point-to-point access to your customers? You don't get a choice. You're a provider.
All I mean, again, all what I'm saying is that I have – more choices than I've ever had before.
You're talking about as the end user. I'm just pointing out that you should be worried as a content creator even more than the end user. Let's say you're right that somebody's going to march in and trench out to my house and give me high-speed internet. Ain't going to happen. But let's say it's right. This still doesn't solve your problem, Brian Brushwood, because you have to pay Comcast and AT&T and Verizon for access to their customers, or you're going to be buffering.
Yeah.
And you're not going to have a stream, so you can. I don't believe.
I mean, yes, in your fantasy, that would be terrible, and I would be against it. I also don't believe it's going to happen. I believe that it would be suicide, because it would be suicide for anyone to do this. The mere fact that you're afraid of this scenario that not one person in the entire world would vote for. There's
you don't
no
get a vote. It's too late. The FCC decides. I
mean, there's no precedent for it to go down the way you're describing, and I don't believe it's going to happen.
Oh, there is
I think
a precedent.
That you
try using Skype in Canada, where Rogers, after 15 minutes, will disconnect you. There is a precedent.
Is that the service provider?
They use Sand. I can't remember the name of it. Sandvine.
How's that working out for them? Are they really excited?
People complain about it.
Is it profitable?
People complain about it, but Rogers as a result, Rogers VoIP does quite well.
Watch, well, I mean, again, short-term benefit, long-term, very foolish maneuver. I don't think it's going to work out for them for the long term.
I hope you're right.
I
understand
think
your
general,
great fear is government regulation of the internet. I understand that.
Well, it's not even my great fear. It's not, I don't even hate it. I just think it's an unfortunately imprecise instrument to be used. And all things being equal, I would rather the highly precise forces of market demand determine it and not the lazy bureaucratic hand of government.
I agree with you 100%. I just don't feel like that's going to happen.
Yeah.
I'm more optimistic than you, but that's always been our dynamic.
I mean, it would always be the case if market forces could operate freely in this case. But we know they can't. They're highly it's highly regulated. These are monopolies.
Yeah,
they are government enfranchised monopolies. So already you don't have a competitive situation. You're very lucky, and I don't think you have a very, very competitive situation even in Austin. But we'll see.
Well, again, in general, my default position is always more competition, 100% across the board.
I agree.
Even in my swimming in soup situation here in Austin, but I guess I'm not
that
as worried about
lukewarm.
It.
Pretty lukewarm.
The mere fact that every time this subject brings up, everybody goes up in arms. I love it, dude. Everybody pull out the pitchforks all the time, because that's really what concerns all these guys. They're not worried. You think these guys are worried about government regulation? These guys buy government officers
well,
all the time.
That's kind of the point, isn't it?
It's exactly. It's like the last thing I want is a entity that has a reputation for being corruptible, easy to buy off.
The reason we get up in arms is because the system that we have as of today brought us all sorts of innovation in this country and a whole lot of startups that are employing people. And those startups happened because it was a fair playing field and everybody could afford the entry fee to it.
We
and
were hoping
now
to
we're
get
heading
yeah,
toward
agree.
A world where if you have the money, you can pay for it.
Right.
But that means a small startup like Instagram, when I met them, was two people at a little picnic table. And so is that startup going to have the same kind of access to the customer base they have today? I don't know.
I mean, the answer is yes, they did, and it turned out great for them. I mean,
no, they did, but the rules are changing now, so that to get access to the Verizon customers or to the Comcast customers, you have to pay. That means a whole lot of little 19-year-old run companies that do not have the capital yet are going to be locked out.
I mean, and so we need government to hold their hands and make sure.
Okay. No, government. Government.
We can stop. We can stop. Yeah. We get everybody's point.
Yeah. All right,
positions are now clear, except for Marquez, who's just sitting on the sidelines thinking, thank God I don't have to say anything. Come on, Marquez. You want to pitch in at all?
When you're remote, by the way, Marquez, it's really hard to jump in. I know where I feel your pain.
Yeah. I just wrote a paper. I had to write a collaborative paper on net neutrality for a final project. So my brain is just kind of all worn out about it now. I had to write like a sort of a PSA, like a public service announcement, giving like all the potential pros and cons for internet users and service providers and blah, blah, blah. So I've heard all the sides already. Basically, I've read all the sides and I'm just.
So where do you stand? What was the thesis of your paper?
My thesis was that you should care, and if it goes to the extreme, and if legislation becomes like really prominent, then you should really care and vote with your wallet. But it was the whole point of the paper was to not take a side and be as neutral as possible and just inform the people reading it that the problems could potentially exist.
I think it comes down, I mean, we don't need to go anymore because I think everybody understands everybody's point of view in here, but it does come down to how much you believe that there is a free market in the internet in the United States. And I find it hard to believe that you think that there is. Maybe you think that there will be if there were.
Let me put it this way. Whether there isn't, I guararantee you there won't be more after a government comes in and sets the rules.
Right. You might
absolutely.
Be right. Absolutely.
100%. Bet my children on it.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah. Yeah. The real solution is, I think, for people, for community internet, for municipalities, and so forth. But unfortunately, then what happens is the government comes in and prevents that, as has happened in many states. They've gone through, I think, 30 of the 50 states because the telcos don't want competition from municipal internet.
Yeah.
And prohibit it. But that's
okay. Pitchforks is the answer.
Our show today brought to you by Audible.com. Audible, and we did talk about this in great extent last week, but I knew, Brian, that you had a different point of view, so I wanted to give you a chance to say something. And we were supposed to have Alexis Ohanian on the show today. He's on a plane, unfortunately, but he's got the right solution. He's buying a billboard outside the FCC offices saying, "Don't touch the internet."
It's good.
Who can argue with that? Our show today.
I have a new favorite audiobook, maybe of all time, Leo.
Yes,
and
yes.
It's going to kill me if you've already read it.
You
probably have.
No.
Tell me you've read The Martian by Andy Weir.
No, I never even heard of it.
Are you kidding me? Oh, I'm so excited. I have a gift for you and for everyone else. The last time I was this excited about a book was when it was Ready Player One by my buddy Ernie Klein.
Yes.
Somebody recommended that I check out The Martian. Takes place, first of all, it's exquisitely well acted by the guy who reads it. It takes place minor spoilers that you learn in the first few pages coming up. The opening line is, log, soul six, I'm pretty much effed. And it's the log of an astronaut who 6 days into their 5-month mission, they're the second mission ever to Mars, 6 days into the 5-month mission, there's a storm that comes in that's so bad they have to scrub the mission. In the shuffle of getting from point A to point B, the communications dish breaks off and stabs him and knocks him. His readings show up as dead and depressurized. They leave without him. He wakes up and realizes that he is alone and marooned on Mars. And all he's got is a few bits and pieces laying around. He knows the next Mars mission is 3 years away, but he's only got a year and a half worth of food. And it's how he makes his way. It's Robinson Crusoe on Mars. The voice is exquisite. The story is so good. I got my wife on it. My wife is not a sci-fi nut, but she loved it. And it was so exciting that we spent I walked in and she had it on speaker and she was clearly in the last hour. I sat there in the dark in my bed holding Bonnie's hand, excitedly listening to the climactic conclusion for a second time. It's been forever since I've loved a book as much as I love The Martian. Definitely, definitely, definitely try it.
I'm going to show you what happens here at audible.com. And this is going to happen to you. You're going to get 2 credits. I'll explain how you do it. But you add it to your cart and you'll look and you'll see, oh my goodness, this is amazing. The cost, nothing. Absolutely zero. It's a magic trick. This is worthy of scam school. Next step. Absolutely not zero. Next step, log in with your brand new platinum account on audible.com, download the book, and start listening. I'm going to complete the purchase because you just sold me on that book, and I'm going to buy it right now, The Martian by Andy Weir. And there you go. Total charge, nothing, 1 credit applied. I am golden. You could do this twice if you go to audible.com/twitdo. There are 2 books waiting for you. Actually, I turned Chad onto a book, and I'm sure you've read this, Brian, that he's really liking. It's called The Wind Up Girl, right?
Yeah, The Wind Up Girl. I've been listening to it for now. I think I'm close to an hour into it. Brian, have you heard of this book?
No.
You're going to be so excited.
Brian is the one who recommended that, 1038, that weird Q230,
well,
whatever.
What he's really going to be excited about is, Brian, you love Snow Crash. And
oh my
world that Snow Crash painted. And that's what me and Leo were talking about. And he said, the wind-up girl. And I'm already into it. And it's absolutely that sort of dystopian, futuristic commercial.
And by the way, this probably reflects on my crackpot bizarro views of the world where, you know, when you read Snow Crash, it's clearly meant to be a dystopian hellhole. But as I read it, I'm like, oh, that seems pretty good. Yeah, everything's up for grabs. You can have your own currency, your own citizenship in multiple franchises. Yeah, no, I'm down for that.
We do have a tradition. I should mention that when we have an author in studio who has a book on Audible, we also mention that's one of your books could be this, Robert Scoble's latest. He wrote it with Shel Israel, The Age of Context, Mobile Sensors, Data, and the Future of Privacy, talking about exactly these issues.
Yep.
Boy, you know, this is the problem with Audible. There's so many great books. We're going to give you an Audible account that's good for two books. Your first month is free at audible.com/twit2. Those first two credits are free. That's usually two books. Some books are a little more. And you know, if you cancel within the first 30 days, you'll pay nothing. The books are always going to be yours. You also get the daily download of the Daily Digest of the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal. That's part of a subscription. I love Audible. We all listen to Audible like crazy.
I love that it syncs up to the Kindle app. So if you read to page 49 in the Kindle,
is that weird?
And then you go in your car and start listening to the Audible book, it starts on page 49. It's really
whisper
awesome.
Sync. That's really a cool thing. Yeah. Whisper sync for voice, I guess they call it. So you can actually read and then listen and then read and then listen. We love Audible. The best readers, the best books, 150,000 strong. You know we're fans. Brian's a big fan. Brian's turned me on to so many great books. I can't wait to listen to The Martian. Right now I'm listening to Flash Mob, the wonderful Michael Lewis book about high-frequency traders. That's an eye-opener. And the unfairness of Wall Street. There's so many great books. And it's like an education always in your brain. Once you're out of school, Marquez, you'll realize that nobody's pouring anything in your brain anymore. You're going to have to find a new source of information into your brain. Flash Boys, is that it? Flash Boys, sorry. Not Flash Mob. Flash Boys. Do you get to do any reading for pleasure, Marquez? You work all the time because you got school and then you do your things. And
no time.
No time.
No time.
No time. No books on those that bedside table there? Nothing?
There's an iPad over there.
Do you read
those
on the
are
iPad?
All textbooks.
Yeah.
Those are all textbooks. Yeah.
Where do you go to school?
Stevens Tech in Hoboken.
And you are a major, a business major?
Yeah, business tech. Business and technology is the name of the major. Yeah.
I am glad that they are teaching you about net neutrality and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's really good. I think one thing Brian and I both agree on, let me see if I can, let's try this. We should get the influence of money out of politics.
Oh, sure. I think. I mean, the problem is, like, what does that mean?
Well,
like,
it's hard to do, isn't
it? Because you could say that and say, which is why all ads should be banned.
Well,
you could say, which is why anyone who owns a media station should never be allowed to talk without giving equal time to another. I mean, the problem is, we agree, like money is a corrupting influence. But the question is, how do we get to fix it? You know?
Right. Well, I have thoughts, but I don't think it's appropriate for this discussion, so we're going to move on. I know how we can get money out of politics. Get Marissa Meyer to foot the bill. She I think, got $200 million last year for her compensation. We were all feeling bad for her because they fired her number two, and he got this big severance package. No, I don't feel too bad.
I don't feel bad for Marissa.
She's done all right. According to an analysis by Equilar, as much perhaps as $214 million cash, stock, and options in Yahoo. Although, Marissa, just a tip, you might want to sell that Yahoo stock as fast as you can.
I mean, that's the catch 22, right?
Yeah.
If she were to exercise all that, it would not reflect well on her prospects.
But Larry Ellison is an example, Oracle CEO, $78.4 million. Nothing, a pittance. The poor guy, I don't know how he lives.
There's no way for me to say what I was going to say without starting another rabbit hole. Well, let's move on to something else.
Well, Enrique de Castro, who was brought over from Google, Marissa brought him over to run ads, advertising at Yahoo, was fired, got a severance package of $109 million. 15 months, COO, 15 months, $109 million. I think that Yahoo's doing better than anybody thinks. Or either that or they're just hemorrhaging money to their executives. Amazon has opened a wearable technology store. We got Scoble over here wearing two cameras, his Google Glasses narrative clip, And Amazon is now bringing a store where you can buy all this crap. What do you think?
Well, it's, you know, we're all waiting for the Apple Watch.
What do you think, Marquez? I mean, have you found Fitbit a wearable? What do you wear? The Fitbit Flex?
I was wearing the Pebble and then the Pebble Steel, but I switched back to the original Pebble.
Ah, why? What's wrong with the Steel?
I just don't like the design as much as I thought I would.
Okay.
I actually prefer the thinner polyurethane band. Yeah. It's just more versatile as a wearable, I guess, for what I do, instead of having a metal on my wrist all the time.
So I've been wearing the Basis watch. So Basis doesn't have any of the Pebble notification or calendar stuff. It's just a health watch. It has a heart rate monitor, steps. It syncs with the phone using low-power Bluetooth, which is nice. So it's a good health watch. So it seems like there's three categories. There's the health watches, like Fitbit Flex, the Basis. There's the notification, you know, the extension of the phone watches, like the Pebble. And then, of course, Galaxy Gear Fit does both.
Yep.
So it's possible to combine the two. And then what was the third category? It seems like maybe we should have a watch that
like as an
they're
independent
specialized
thing.
Ones for triathletes or
that,
something
that's
like
independent that like the doesn't GPS need watches. A phone it just does its own thing
yeah mm-hmm. But
are you still down last time we talked about this Leo you were not so crazy about the Pebble whereas I love mine
I gave Chad my Pebble
loving it
really
he loves
loving
it
so
you,
much
you, so you still so, wear okay, the Pebble now, too me,
oh yeah
to,
oh,
to, no I'm Schwood do you wear the Pebble.
Oh, yeah, no, right here. Keep in mind, like, the thing is, if you receive, let's say, 100 notifications of any variety a day, and let's say conservatively it takes you 4 or 5 seconds to pull out your phone and check or whatever, you realize every single day you wear a Pebble, that's what, 500 seconds saved by just glancing instead of pulling the phone out. That's what, 5-10 minutes of free
time?
Yeah,
but I don't want to wear an ugly-ass watch just to save a few minutes.
Well, it's ugly-ass now, but this to me, and I've said this before, this is the Palm Pilot of the watch, the smartwatch, right?
And I was
the,
a big
the
Pilot came out. Fan, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. The Newton came out, and it was hilarious, and then the Palm Pilot said, let's do less and do it better, and it took off, and I look forward to what's happening. What's funny, though, is I love wearing it. I love my Pebble. Every time we shoot Scam School, I take it off and put it in my pocket because I'm so aware of how hilarious it's going to look three or four years from now.
Right. Might as well have a giant phone that you talk on. You
know? Exactly.
Marquez, what would be the perfect... So you're an athlete. So Marquez plays Ultimate Frisbee.
Right.
So you're an athlete. But what would be the ultimate in a wearable for you? What do you think will happen? What do you look for?
I don't usually wear my watch when I'm like... working out or practice or anything, but when I have the Pebble on, like in class, it's for the same reason as Brian said, because I can just glance instead of pulling my phone in my pocket, which teachers apparently hate, by the way. So if you're just, I guess, glancing at your watch might still
that's
not
insulting.
Look great if you're a teacher.
It looks like you're going. When is this class going to be over?
Damn, yeah, I'm just waiting, begging for the class to end. But I feel like it's a quicker glance, and I can not take as many seconds of attention away from whatever the class is about. So. Just as a student, I guess I'm a fan of the Pebble and the notification system.
That's one reason I never took to the Pebble, because when I'm sitting at anywhere, my phone's right in front of me, and on my car I have a dashboard mount for my phone, so I don't need the glance ability that much.
Yeah, it's just that I have to take my phone out of my pocket and then.
If I was in school button. And I wasn't able to look at my phone because my teacher didn't like it, totally. I get that.
So. Tim Cook here, calling from Apple for Marquez Brownlee. Hey, Marquez, good talking to you. Love your stuff. What do you think we should do with the iWatch? What do you think? Just your anything. Just tell me what you should.
It should be light. It should not be... Because, I don't know, I'm not a fashion designer. I just think the design of it is going to be extremely important for it. The way it looks, the way it feels.
See, I feel like... It's too early for them to try to get away with any kind of design that looks svelte or thin or try to sell us on it. I say own the thickness, own the blockiness for now, which I feel like Apple would be able to do.
See, we keep seeing Moto 360 and then...
I think that looks sweet. Do you like the Moto 360?
No, I do. Yeah, that's the one I'm looking forward to most, and I can't wait till we actually get to like physically have it.
And that's going to be out this summer, they say. It looks like a watch. It's round.
Exactly.
It's a little thick. It's got, this is the closest thing that I've seen.
I just have a couple concerns about the display and the battery life,
right,
those two things, just because it's obviously not that big. So it's going to have an LCD display that should be bright enough to view outdoors. But also, if it's a watch, it's always on. So you're just glancing at the time. So is it an always on, very bright LCD,
ooh,
in which case you're burning through battery, right, constantly and have a really short life? Or does it have a huge battery? I don't know how that's going to work. So I'm curious.
That is the one thing that I really adore about the Pebble, is the fact that I really do only charge it like once a week, basically.
That is, everybody agrees, that's one of the best things. So you interviewed the new CEO of Motorola yourself, Marques. Did you talk about any of this stuff?
I interviewed, yeah. He hinted at the fact that they were working on wearables when I interviewed him.
Well, that was a couple months ago. It wasn't Dennis Woodside. You talked to the new guy.
No, I talked to Dennis.
You talked to Dennis, okay.
Yeah.
So he's no longer CEO. He's moved on.
Right.
So he hinted at this.
Mm-hmm.
But we now know because they've announced it. This is not a guess.
Right.
Rick Osterloh, who's taken over for him, is an interesting fellow. Actually, I like him a lot. He was the guy who designed Blur, Motorola Blur, which was among the worst of the carrier improvements on Android. And I said, Rick, I'm sorry. That's a terrible thing. Why did you do that? He said, we had to, because Android in the version 2 was so god-awful that nobody would have bought it. We had to clean it up a little bit. But he says now, and that's when Motorola X came out. He said, now we don't need to. It's a beautiful UI and a great OS, and we don't have to modify it. I think the Moto 360 is my... But this is a notification watch. It's not a health watch. Yeah, and it sounds like you don't have any interest in a health watch.
No, I don't wear it for any like fitness. I've never even bought a Fitbit or a Nike Fuel Band or anything. I just don't.
That's because you're fit.
Wear stuff when I work out. No, I do work out. Like a pedometer seems like a cool idea, but I just don't have it turned on my Galaxy S5. Like I just don't really care how many steps I take.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, well, and I do the stuff I do, it never registers. So I row for half an hour and I look and it says you took 3 steps.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
Then Lisa said, well, you know you rowed. I said, yes, but I want credit for it. Right. I want credit. I want a star.
Points.
I want points. But you know you rowed. You rowed. No, but I didn't. I have to. And how's Kevin Rose going to know I rowed if I don't show up on the leaderboard? I don't get any credit for it. Do you like, Marques, do you like that S5? Is that your daily driver?
No, my daily driver is the 1M8 Google Play Edition.
Yeah, baby.
So. Is that you too? Yeah.
Well, I don't use a Google Play Edition. I actually think that the stock HTC Sense is not so bad.
I do like Sense 6, but I still prefer stock Android. So that's where I'm at right now with my daily driver.
Me
but
too.
I'm testing a couple other phones.
How do you think the camera? Oh, the one. You got the. Wait, whoa. Ho. Hold that up again. You have a OnePlus One.
One, yeah. This is a really exciting phone.
You don't think that's for a long time I thought this is a scam. This is a fake. They're never going to release anything.
Yeah.
It's a real phone. It works?
In the flesh, yeah. It's a living, breathing CyanogenMod. I turned it off. CyanogenMod phone. And of course, I really like stock Android so much. So I'm a fan of the OS here, the interface. The camera is very impressive. And the price is the most impressive part of it. So
$350, I think. Was that what they're going to?
This is the 16 gig, so it's $300. And then the 64 gig is in black, and that'll be $350.
Wow. So this is the reason I thought it was a scam. First of all, OnePlus One OPPO, and these guys came from Oppo, OPPO. So I thought, it's really an Oppo phone, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, I see a lot of the resemblance. I see a lot of the same
like
design
the
language. I have the Find 7A next to me too, and it's very similar.
Hold it up, though. It looks very thin. Let me see the OnePlus One.
It might even be the same panel. It's a 5.5-inch 1080p display.
It's a nice big phone.
It's got this silver trim around it. I guess I prefer this design a little bit more. The back, the camera actually looks almost the exact same as the Find 7A, in fact.
How can they sell this phone for $350, though? Doesn't seem possible.
That's the question.
Yeah.
Costs on these things are coming way down.
Well, and they'll give it to you for a buck if you smash your phone. Did you see that? What do you think of that one?
That, I'm glad they turned back on that.
For they did?
They were offering, they got a clue that that wasn't the best idea. So they were offering this contest, I guess, where they would you submit your phone and your idea for smashing it, and they would pick 100 people, and then you smash your phone.
Your ride's here. Do you want to get that? No.
Every day there's a traffic jam at like this exact hour, and people still beeping their horn.
And people like to beep. What's wrong? What could possibly go wrong? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
So they turned back on it, and now they're allowing the 100 winners that they did select to donate their phone instead of smashing it, which is a good idea.
Good. Much better idea. Yeah. Although, you know, those guys with the blender, BlendTech, they smash stuff all the time. Nobody says anything about it.
It's true.
The Will It Blend show.
I visited them.
But it wasn't 100 phones.
Well, that's right. These will be 100 phones. It'll be and they really wanted you to take a video, one take of you smashing it, demonstrating not only that it was smashed, but that it can no longer turn on. So you have to turn it on, show it, hit it with a hammer, show it again that it's not turning on now. It seems like a lot. I'm just searching my inbox to see if I got anything from him. I guess not. So I guess I'm going to have to wait. Do you feel like this phone is ready? Is it buggy or is it reliable? Is it?
So this one I have here is like super alpha. It doesn't actually have volume buttons, but they're sending me another one that's like finished packaging, finished product. But right now from the software, it's fine. I mean, it's CyanEngine mod entirely. It didn't have any bugs or quirks once it's working. So, I mean, I feel like it's awesome. Working great.
And you said you really like the camera. Tell me about the camera.
I do. I was impressed. So it has this new camera app from CyanEngine mod. Of course, you know how you can swipe in stock Android from the side. So you swipe in a little bit and then it says, okay, we'll open the camera.
Oh, that's cool.
But it's the whole entire viewfinder, first of all. So I like that. It's really simple. It takes 4K video. It takes 1080p. Takes slow-mo HD video in 720p, takes 13 megapixel photos, I believe.
Wow.
And they look really good. Sweet dynamic range.
Better than your M8.
Definitely better than the M8, yeah.
I know the M8 is only 4 megapixels. I think it looks, I like the pictures out of it.
The Google Play Edition M8 doesn't take nearly as good pictures, unfortunately. And I do like pixels, so I'm not a fan of it only being a 4-megapixel camera. Right. I like to zoom in and pixel peep, I guess. I'm not normal on that. But when I'm looking at Galaxy S5 photos and iPhone 5S photos, I'm way more impressed. So I think this is a lot closer to those cameras, which is impressive because it's so cheap.
Is that what the kids are calling it now, pixel peep?
Maybe I'm weird that I pixel peep. I don't know. That's what I call it. I like
You zoom in on it and you're pixel peeping it?
Yeah, on my own phone, just because if I'm taking a landscape shot and I'm literally comparing the quality of, you know, two different cameras. I took the same picture on both of these cameras and I'm trying to compare which one looks better. So I'm zooming in on the edge of something and I look at one and it's softer here and it's sharper here.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. All right. Well, I thought it was a scam, so it's not. And it'll be out this summer. And it really will be $300 to $350.
That's what they're saying.
Now you're talking Nexus 5's prices.
It'll be interesting to see what they hand out at Google I/O this year.
Well, the rumor, I don't know if this is true, the rumor is that they're going to replace Nexus with the Silver Edition. This sounds an awfully lot like what Microsoft did with their signature PCs, which nobody made. Vizio, I think, made them. The idea of being, God, you people are crapping up our Windows devices, so we're going to sell a signature PC that's just pure Windows. And none of the manufacturers bought it. They said, no, we need to make money off our crapware. And it feels like the Silver Edition is kind of the same idea. What do you think, Marquez?
It reminds me of the Google Play Edition stuff.
Right. Where I'm not sure how it's different. Yeah.
Originally, I saw no reason for it to exist at all. And I'm still kind of, you know, I'm not sure what benefit it has to a company to have a Google Play Edition other than to be more developer friendly and have that relationship with Google. But when the Google Play Edition Galaxy S5 first came out, that blew my mind. So it reminds me a lot of the same program, and I'd be curious if that's an actual thing, not just a rumor.
Yeah, we don't know, and they may still make the Nexus phones, which are made by Google to Google specs, as opposed to saying, I'm going to take the Galaxy S5 or the HTC One and just make it a pure Android.
Because that's what I keep saying, is the only reason, or the main reason the Nexus exists is to show that Google spec. Like, they move away from things like the SD cards, and they move away from capacitive buttons. And if they were to use the Galaxy S5 as a Google Play Edition, you still have the SD card and the physical home button and all that stuff that you're trying to move away from. So a Nexus serves to move at least software and hardware in the same direction Google wants.
Well, and you could thank Nexus for the new M8. They got rid of the, you know, they got the capacitive buttons. They've got on-screen buttons. And you know what? I was not a fan at first, and I actually think it's great. I see where Google was going with this thing. Hey, we're going to take a break. Come up with more in just a bit. MKBHD is here. Marcus Brownlee. Robert Scoble, the Scobalizer. Brian Brushwood. Night Train.
The Brushwoodizer.
The Brushwoodizer. Is it Night Train? Or is that a fortified alcohol?
Night Attack.
Night Attack.
I was really confused if you were still talking to me.
Night Attack. Is the name
Night
of the
Train.
New show.
The Night Train Thunderbird is our new podcast. Night Train, it's amazing. Boone's Farm Strawberry is our new podcast. It's
this
amazing.
Show brought to you by Night Train.
Zima, our new podcast. You're going to love it.
Our show today brought to you by Squarespace.com, the all-in-one platform that makes it easy to create your own professional website, your online portfolio, your e-store. I want you to visit Squarespace.com. Just take a look. They are constantly improving the platform. If you haven't been there in a month, it's a whole new, there's all new stuff, new features, new designs, better support, 25 fantastic designer templates. Now you might say, well, but okay, but no, but there's something about these templates. First of all, this is the state of the art now in web design. So they're using state-of-the-art CSS and JavaScript. They're mobile responsive. That means you don't have a mobile site that's separate from your main site. It just all looks great. That's really important, I think, if you're going to do a website these days. It should just flow into the screen naturally, whatever size screen you're using, even a 4-inch iPhone screen. There's e-commerce on all the templates now. Even for the $8 a month plan, you can get e-commerce, which means if you're doing a benefit for a school, a fundraiser, if you want to, you know, you can do that. Cash wedding registry, email or chat support 24/7 right from the Squarespace offices in New York City. Also, they've got a great customer help site where you can get access to self-help articles, video workshops. They do webinars. This is hosting plus software to give you the best possible experience. They even got apps. They're so good. These developers are so good. They've got the Squarespace Metric app, which lets you check your site stats like page views, unique visitors, social media followers. It's iPad and iPhone. They've got a blog app that makes it so easy to post, to moderate comments. They've got the logo designer. I can go on and on. The best thing to do is just go to squarespace.com, click the Get Started button. You got 2 weeks to play with it. No credit card required. All I ask is when you decide to pay for it, it's, by the way, as low as $8 a month, and you get a free domain name when you sign up for a year. Just use our offer code TWIT and you'll get 10% off. Really, I think the $24 plan for e-commerce is an amazing deal, too. They don't ever talk about that, but that is such a good deal. Squarespace.com. Please use the offer code TWIT when you buy. You don't need a credit card up to that point. Quick run through of the last few news stories. Daily Motion, the European YouTube, says Google's cheating, serving up YouTube results instead of Daily Motion results. There's always the fear that Google would favor its own sites. And I always thought Google shouldn't be in the content business for that reason. This is the first I've heard of actually somebody saying this is actually happening.
I mean, I will say that I almost never catch a Daily Motion link when I do a YouTube or Google search on any of this
stuff. I got a new series. Let's see if I search for Mario Batali. They've got a new Made Here series of him cooking. No, I don't see a thing. I see Mario Batali YouTube.
See, now I don't want to say that this is a nefarious anti-competitive practice on YouTube's
Google would say, hey, no, this is what people want. Right?
Yeah, I would be curious to see how much of their secret sauce they could expose to justify it, because I do agree that Daily Motion is definitely underrepresented, considering the size of that site.
It seems fairly credible, but we don't know. Let's see. Microsoft Blinks. I used to work at Microsoft. They said, we are not going to update Windows XP. That's it. It's over. April 8th, that's the last update. Well, it turns out there was a zero-day flaw in Internet Explorer. It affected all versions of Windows, including XP. So they sent out a patch last week. Does this mean...
They went back? They patched an XP thing?
Yeah.
That's a bummer. I feel like they should have stood firm. Like,
stay firm, Microsoft.
It's really... when I worked at Microsoft, the guy who runs the Internet Explorer team pulled me into his office and explained how life is for him. They have so many customers with so many installs that if the CTO of XYZ big company calls you up and says, you fix this or I'm moving to Linux,
right?
You decide to fix it.
Yep. I thought this was an interesting story, free market story. And in fact, it takes place in your neck of the woods, Mr. Brian Brushwood. There was a startup called Outbox. Seemed like a great idea. A couple of guys... They said, what we're going to do is you fill out a forwarding form at the mail at the post office, and you forward all your mail to us. Don't even have it delivered to us, to yourself. Just forward it to us. We will scan it. We will let you check boxes, say, deliver that, deliver that, don't deliver that, don't deliver that. Seemed like a great idea. They launched in Austin. I don't know if you've seen this. Outbox, have you seen it?
No, what's funny is I saw this story and I didn't understand it. And I remember thinking, like, I want Leo to explain this
to me.
So I'm hearing all this for the first time.
I'll explain it. They got funding. People got excited about it. They wanted to expand. So they went to San Francisco. They started doing it in San Francisco. Everybody wants this. Nobody wants snail mail unless they want it, right? And so much of it is junk mail. So they get called to meet with the Postmaster General. In Washington, D.C. They say, oh, this is exciting. Maybe the post office wants to partner with us because it's a better way. They go into the meeting, and instead of just Patrick Donahue, the Postmaster General, there also is the General Counsel of the United States Postal Service and the Chief of Digital Strategy.
I could tell this story turns out super great with everybody high-fiving and the customer being happy.
Evans, this is the story from inside sources. Evans says, the Postmaster looked at us and said, we have a misunderstanding. You disrupt my service, and we will never work with you.
This is awful.
And this is the quote. The smoke. Now, there's no proof. This is just Evan's recount. He says, the Postmaster General, the guy in charge of the Postal Service, says, you mentioned making the service better for our customers, but you need to understand the American citizens aren't our customers. About 400 junk mailers, that's our customers. And your service hurts our ability to serve those customers. By keeping that junk mail out of people's mailbox, you're putting us out of business.
Okay, for the record, you were wondering why I'm the nut job who would prefer to not see government inject itself
this
in the net neutrality
your case.
Debate.
This supports
your team,
your case.
Right?
Yeah.
It's disgusting because objectively, they could move less crap.
Right.
Spend less time, waste fewer resources, right. but this protectionist buggy whip crap my case, Your Honor.
They told Outbox, here's what we're going to do. We're not going to honor those forwarding requests. So Outbox said, oh, crap, now what do we do? They literally had trucks go to everybody's mailbox in Austin and San Francisco, get the mail out of the mailbox. You have to sign a long contract that says it's okay to do that, and take it. They took your mail. And, of course, it was so expensive, they've gone out of business.
That's a real bummer, man.
Yeah,
and again, I'm not going to harp on it, but, like, this is, to me, unexceptional. It's something that happens a lot, and it's the reason for my default skepticism of injecting government in the
All
net
right,
neutrality.
You know what? I'm going to give you this round. You're absolutely right. In their closing blog post saying we're going out of business, they said, you may think government organizations are completely insanely backwards. You're wrong. They're worse.
Look at Las Vegas, right? They build this new tram. It's a high-speed tram.
Yeah.
And it stops a quarter mile from the airport. Why did they do that?
We got you this close.
And the same forces that brought the that to happen means we don't get Uber in Vegas. Yeah.
And you don't get Airbnb in San Francisco, practically banned in San Francisco because they don't pay hotel taxes. Yeah, you're right.
Man,
Brian.
It's easy to find these examples. I feel like you're just rubbing my shoulders now, Leo. You're making me feel better with all my examples.
You're feeling better, Brian.
Don't you hate when the world isn't black and white? It's sort of muddy.
It's like, I mean, I love Airbnb. I love Lyft. I love Uber. I love all of these disruptive services, and it bums me out that people, you know, are using the hammer of bureaucracy to shut them down.
Well, I think we should shut this thing down. Thank you, Brian Brushwood, for being the voice of reason and bringing a little bit of Texas into this show.
Well, thank you for patronizing me and for putting up with my nonsense. Look, I'm 100% wrong about everything. I get that. It's just that I'm glad. This felt very balanced, Leo. It all turned out really well.
Damn your eyes, Brushwood.
Hey, can I tell you guys about a brand new thing? And I want to know if Marquez thinks this is going to work. We launched a brand new series on Scam School. It's only the second time we've launched something new on the channel. But at some point, if you've ever watched Scam School, every episode is very much modeled on a television show. Episodes are usually 10 to 15 minutes long, which in the YouTube world is like Lawrence of Arabia. We have a cold open, we have an intro sequence, we have an intro, and then finally we get into, people tend to just jump forward like, just get to the trick, just get to the trick. And meanwhile, we have this back catalog of like 300 past episodes of Scam School with really good bar tricks and clever scams that you could pull on your friends. So we decided to try launching something new called Scam School Remix. And the entire episode, for example, the first episode we did, we just released, the entire episode is 75 seconds long.
Ooh,
and the
I
idea
like
is
that.
Waste no time.
I want you to hold both your arms out.
So 75 seconds, you will learn how to scam drinks.
Less than that, because the second half of it is all follow-up. I think you learn the trick. Here, watch this. You can see the trick right here.
I want you to hold your arms out to the side. Here you go. Let me get a good grip here. All right. Hold on tight.
Yeah. Couple things to make this work. First of all, they should be holding
the
their, so boom.
Stands one. You're going to break your arm doing that. Don't do that anymore. That's dangerous.
No. It's all right. As long as they're the one lifting. But you'll notice, like, in the second half, we're 45 seconds in, and we're already into follow-up. And then the wrap-up is the last 30 seconds or so. So the idea is we've been, like, openly hostile to the things that make YouTube successful. So now we're trying to embrace it by shortening everything
and
taking.
Chad, didn't you? Chad thought you were the video. The video was you. You got confused. I think you did.
That happens. But Marquez, here's my question to you. Marquez, how important is brevity in the YouTube world these days? The don't waste my time, get to the point, go, go, go. Is that a leading factor in how you design your videos?
Not necessarily for me, but for YouTube in general, when you have a series going on and when people are like finding a whole bunch of your stuff at the same time, it does get important that it's quick to get to the next point. So if someone were to find my channel, for example, and want to just cruise through 15 videos, my intro is 7 seconds long at the beginning, and then I get right into the content. So I guess I do make a point to get right into things. But like you were saying, with a 15-minute episode where you're kind of formatting after TV, where it takes a while to get into what you're actually titling the video, people might just skip over that. And I guess it does make a lot of sense to just head right into what you're going to do. If you have a title, a thumbnail, and the first 10 seconds of the video, you're already into it, that's very satisfying to someone who clicked on it.
Well, I'm really excited. The idea is, and this was my pitch to the folks over at Discovery, was let's weaponize previous videos. let's make them viral gold by taking what was a 10-minute episode and making it 90 seconds. We'll see if that works out.
Yeah.
Awesome. You can find Marquez, of course, on YouTube, MKBHD, youtube.com/MKBHD. Just the one channel. You're not going to do an MK4HD, MKB4HD.
4K now. This one.
Just the one channel. That's it. Right there. It is awesome. Yeah. And Marquez has actually showed that people on YouTube will watch longer videos with more content. And that encourages me. I think that's really great. You do great stuff. It's good to have you on. Thanks. Appreciate it. And your review of the OnePlus One is right up there, too. What is that, a Tesla? Do you drive a Tesla, too?
I did.
I drove the new Mercedes-Benz electric.
Yeah, I saw
you. Take that, Marquez.
You had an exclusive on that one. How did you like that? I watched that video. It looked pretty sweet.
It was nice. I at South by Southwest, BMW gave me the i3, which is...
That's BMW's electric.
And these are $40,000 cars.
Right.
$45,000. The Mercedes is bigger. It's a little quieter.
But the Tesla's the one to get, isn't it?
Yeah, but that's $100,000, you know,
well,
or $70,000 plus.
Right.
You know,
so expensive, yeah.
Out of my budget.
Right.
I mean, $45,000.
But even the i3 is out of my budget. Would you consider that?
I'm looking at it. My Prius is 5 years old now, so nice. I'm definitely looking. I'm hoping my car lasts until the Tesla.
Inquire about the cost of electricity, because I know a number of people with electric cars who say, you know what, I'm paying through the nose. It's very expensive.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't compared know if you actually. Gas? Yeah, I don't know if you actually save money because the utilities have wised up. They say, oh, you're using a lot of wattage there. I think we're going to have to put you in a new tier.
I didn't know.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I'd like to know more about that, ladies and gentlemen. So we've got three YouTube stars here and me. But I did interview a YouTube star last night. A little group called Pomplamoose, and that'll be airing next tomorrow. I guess we'll release that as our triangulation for the day. And then Jeff Pulver of Vonage, the man who founded Vonage, and an early advocate for voice on the internet. We'll be part of. We'll be on triangulation tomorrow.
I got to do something even better than the Mercedes last week.
What's that?
I interviewed David Hall, the guy who builds the spinning thing on top of the Google self-driving car, the Velodyne LiDAR.
Yeah, the
Every
LiDAR.
Self-driving car uses his product.
Wow.
And he's a pretty cool guy.
The LiDAR king. And where will we find those videos?
YouTube somewhere. YouTube.com/Scopalizer.
You got to work on the plug. These guys got it down. Just pay attention to that.
Branding, you know? YouTube.com/Scopalizer. YouTube.com/Building43.
There you go.
YouTube.com/Rackspace.
There you go. All right. Hey, did you see any shows from this week? We had some good shows. If you missed a little bit of Twit this week, here's a little rundown of everything you saw. The new weaponized version.
Previously on
Yeah,
Twit.
There it is.
Weaponized Twit. Today. Will consumers understand the distinction? I mean, anonymous sounds anonymous, but in fact what you're doing is you're giving Facebook all the signals it wants.
The vocal influencers will understand it, and they're the ones who would kill it if you didn't do it right.
This Week in Law.
Do we give our data to third parties are real and they are compelling? Because for most people, the biggest security risk is not the NSA or the Chinese government or cyber criminals. It's I lost this stuff.
Yeah.
This Week in Enterprise Tech.
Our second blip is all about a new zero-day bug found in Internet Explorer. This one actually has the Department of Homeland Security issuing a security alert to stop using IE.
All about Android.
Those that want to look at every single app we've ever featured on the show, you can go to wiki.twit.tv, search for the All About Android wiki, and you'll find the list in there.
Twit. Thousands of hours of high-quality dribble.
I'm a huge loser, according to this. In 2011, I came in last. 2013, Aaron Newcomb beat me.
Who? Poor Ron Richards. And what's coming up next week, Mr. Mike Elgin of TNT fame?
Coming up this week, TechCrunch Disrupt hits New York tomorrow, May 5th. We also have a couple of mystery Google announcements to contend with. Google and Intel will unveil something about Chromebooks and the Chrome OS on Tuesday, May 6th. And finally, Google has summoned Google Glass users to what they're calling a Glass Explorer celebration on Friday, May 9th, at Silicon Valley's Computer History Museum. They accepted only the first 100 people who replied to the invite. The event is some kind of announcement, but nobody outside Google knows what it's all about. And that's what's coming up this week. Back to you, Leo.
Thank you, Mike Elgin. TNT. Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. Pacific.
I got the invite, but by the time I responded, it was sold out. So,
bummer.
You should get a special Scopalizer exemption.
I don't care about this stuff anymore.
You wrote an article saying it's all over for Google Glass.
It's not over. It's just a deeply flawed product that hasn't gotten fixed. And, a year ago, I overlooked all those flaws, but because I thought they would get fixed in the first year.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
Now I'm waiting.
Marquez, did you ever wear glass?
Yeah. I mean, on occasion. Yeah. I have it and I wear it for once in a while stuff. But
for like dressy events.
Like I almost brought it to the Tesla stuff to get like a perspective of like, it's usually for the camera that I'm bringing it, but I want to get a first person perspective of something.
I'll give it that. It's less dorky looking than wearing a head strap and a GoPro. But just a little. Do you graduate this year, Marquez?
Next year.
All right.
2015.
We'll have a party for you next June.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us, everybody. We do This Week in Tech every Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 2200 UTC, right here on twit.tv. Please watch. But if you can't, don't worry. On-demand audio and video always available after the fact, not only on YouTube, but wherever podcasts are available, as well as twit.tv. You can just download it, watch it to your heart's content. never any charge. The tit to twit t-shirt. Don't giggle.
Smooth. Smooth like butter, Leo. It was great.
Don't giggle. You dirty-minded pervert, you. The twit t-shirt is a Teespring.
The twitty shirt. The twitty That's what they call it.
It looks
show
good.
Us your twitties.
Show us the girls' version. It looks really good. TEESpring.com/twit. There you go. No. Yeah, that's it. And they're only $20, and we're so close to our goal of 500. Just a few more. How many more days did the thing runs out? Soon.
12.
12 more days? It's a smexy shirt. You're going to like it. May the 4th be with you, ladies and gentlemen. That is this Star Trek Day edition of This Week in Tech.
On behalf of Spock, Kirk, and all of the Klingons, thank you.
May the Force be with you.
So it goes. Thank you, everybody. We'll see you next time. Another twit is in the can.
Can you grok it?
All right.